Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are at the end of the first week of December, and it's kind of cold and dark and dreary outside. But you know what? That's why we have the infrared heaters on the front porch, and that's why we'll mull the cider and put the jug away and take those long necks out of the ice. You know, it's how you deal with the seasons, isn't it? It is Friday on the front porch here on the Horn. I'm just Bob, and I'm awful glad to have you along for the ride this evening. Hope you enjoy yourselves. You know how it is with Friday on the front porch. We go a bit afield, if you know what I mean. More than the usual stuff is suitable for conversation. Well, what isn't suitable for conversation? Bearing in mind that there are people having dinner during the show, but you know what I mean. Oh, big old pot of vegetable soup on the stove over at Sue's. Yum, yum. Toast up the French bread. Ah, yeah, that's the good stuff. And they're dancing. They're outside chasing snowflakes. The young folks are outside chasing snowflakes with their tongues in Austin, according to Texas Betsy. They don't see snow that often, but you know, there's a lot of coal-fired power plants in Texas. So I would highly recommend against ingesting said snow in any amount. Just, you know, because. So that's some of the places that we are. Some other stuff to go into this evening, Front Porch Friday kind of stuff. Now, I got to say that I was, just rather taken by this one particular story out of the New York Times today, or yesterday, actually. Headline, Bin Laden not in Pakistan, Prime Minister says. The Pakistani Prime Minister, countering demands to intensify the hunt for Osama bin Laden, said Thursday that he did not believe the fugitive leader of al-Qaeda was in Pakistan, as many Western governments and intelligence agencies assert. And you know what a sad, sick, sorry sense of humor I have that immediately reminded me of this.
All right, Clancy, take the boys and surround the house.
Cops! Hide me, quick! Hide me!
Here, quick!
Hide me, too! Hide me!
It's not fair! You gotta hide me!
I must be dreaming. It couldn't be this easy. Okay, quick, hide in here. Now don't move until I tell you to.
All right, open up. This is the police. All right, where's Rocky? Where is he hiding?
He's not in the stove.
Whoa, he's hiding in that stove, eh?
Now look, would I coin on his gas if my friend Rocky was in there?
You might, Robert, you might.
Well, would I throw a lighted match in there if my friend was in there?
Well, all right, Robert, you've convinced me. I'll look for Rocky in the city.
The coast is clear, fellas. They've gone.
Okay, Clancy, take the boys and surround the house.
Jesus, fellas, the cops!
Open up! This is the police! All right, Rabbit, where's Rocky? Where is he hiding?
He's not in this stove.
Oh-ho! Or he's hiding in the stove, eh?
Would I turn on the gas if he was in there?
You might, Robert, you might.
Well, would I throw a lighted match in there if he was in there?
Oh, no, you don't!
Take me with you. Please don't leave me with that screwy rabbit. Oh, I confess. I did it. Arrest me. Arrest me.
Yeah, so you know how my screwy mind works. But, you know, you can just see the Prime Minister of Pakistan, can't you? Oh, he's not in the provinces. He's not in the lawless provinces. No, he's definitely not there. Ah, he's not there, is he? Yeah, Pakistani Prime Minister Yusuf Razi Gilani spoke at a news conference with Prime Minister Gordon Brown of Britain a few days after Mr. Brown demanded that Afghanistan and Pakistan match plans for increased Allied troop levels in Afghanistan by taking tough actions of their own, including a stepped-up effort in Pakistan. You have to say it that way now, Pakistan, to capture Mr. bin Laden. Don't you love the New York Times style manual? He's still Mr. bin Laden. Jeez. Mr. Gilani and Mr. Brown held talks 2 days after that really, really good speech that the president gave. And the speech apparently, according to the Times, rattled nerves across a region spanning the long, mountainous, and porous border between Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Oh, he's hiding in the lawless provinces, is he?
If he was hiding in the lawless provinces, would I fly this predator drone right over the lawless provinces?
You might, Rabbit, you might.
And would I launch a hellfire missile on a wedding party if he was in these lawless provinces?
You might, Obama, you might.
God, no!
You know how it works. So, I'm sorry, it just kind of grabbed me.
He isn't here! No, he's definitely not here! He's not in Pakistan! No, you don't need to send the Hellfire missiles into any of our wedding parties, okay? Okay, please?
You know how it goes. He was the Prime Minister of Pakistan, I don't know, was asked about Western demands that... Why is it when I see Western with a capital W in the New York Times, I think that it ought to be followed with... You know, that kind of thing.
Wah, wah, wah.
That Pakistan hunt more rigorously for Mr. bin Laden. Round up the usual suspects for Mr. bin Laden widely. But I'm sorry, I know this is deadly serious and deadly in earnest, but it's turned into such a circus act that I have no respect for it. Okay? I mean, I know that probably marks me as just a big jerk, but I refuse to be conned. And that's what this smells like, is a great big con. Where's the bin Laden? Where's the bin Laden? Just put your $10 bill down. Put your $30 billion down. Where's the bin Laden? Find the bin Laden. See, here's the bin Laden. Just watch my hands. Find the bin Laden. Oh, goodness, no, that's not the bin Laden. Here, let me take your $30 billion. No, he was also asked about Western demands, wah, 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 that Pakistan hunt more rigorously for Mr. bin Laden, widely believed in Washington and London, to have fled the Tora Bora region of Afghanistan after the fall of the Taliban regime there in late 2001. Mr. Gilani said, I doubt the information which you are giving is correct, because I don't think Osama bin Laden is in Pakistan. In recent years, Pakistani officials have been given to asserting things like he's dead from renal failure. Sometime after he scrambled over the 14,000-foot shoulder of the Tora Bora Mountains. And while he said, I don't think he's in Pakistan, Mr. Gilani did not go any further saying where he thought he was. No, no, no. See, when you're involved in a game of geopolitical three-card Monte, it's not the dealer's job to... Hey, I think it's under, because then after they take your money, you feel like you've been cheated. And after you've been had in a nice rousing game of $30 billion a throw three-card Monty, you're not supposed to feel like you were cheated until you get a few blocks down the road. You know, hey! I don't think that game was on the square. Sorry, I mean, I've been up and down the Carnival Midway a couple of times, and I think I'm pretty good at sensing when we're about, you know, when we're in the middle of a con. From Marty, early into the program, thanks for reminding me of the three Sam Adams in my fridge. All I need now is 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time to go home to them. I know the feeling, Marty. I know the feeling. Lord, don't I know the feeling. Another thing at least be aware of this evening, because the holiday shopping season is upon us, is just where your money's going, especially if you screw up. The Center for Responsible Lending has a little announcement out. And I found this over at Facing South at southernstudies.org. Great website, by the way. A new voice for a changing South. Facing South, the Institute for Southern Studies. I think I'd like to be a feller there. I mean, if you're the Institute for Southern Studies, surely to God you don't hand out fellowships, you hand out fellerships. I'd love to be a feller at the Institute for Southern Studies and study some Southernness. I really would, not being a smart aleck. But, no, they note over at Facing South, the Center for Responsible Lending is warning today that excessive fees that banks charge for account overdrafts, and you were wondering how we were going to pay for the surge in Afghanistan. Oh, my God. The Center for Responsible Lending is warning today that excessive fees that banks charge for account overdrafts cost U.S. consumers $24 billion a year. Hey, that's just $6 billion shy of being able to pay for a little old surge. That comes out to, they're apparently good at math at Facing South, that comes out to $65 million a day. And that's going to mean something during the holiday shopping period, those overdraft fees. The Center for Responsible Lending says as follows. This means our nation's financial institutions will collect some $1.8 billion during the 28-day holiday shopping season through practices such as charging $34 for an average $17 debit card overdraft, and manipulating the order in which they subtract debits from their customers' accounts. Oh boy, I tell you, it's just more than just writing a hot check now, isn't it? They go on to note, Facing South does, more people are affected than you might think. Because, you know, if you bounce a check, you're a bad person, and none of us likes to think that we're bad people. And we tend to think that, oh, well, we must have screwed up. No, it's the three-card Monty game again. Do I detect a theme developing for the evening? No, it's not just you. In 2008, 50 million U.S. consumers overdrew their checking account at least once over a 12-month period. 27 million got socked with 5 or more overdraft fees. Now, here's the fun part. This stuff is actually considered to be a profit center for banks in America. Because, of course, we have a non-responsive Congress that won't step out and protect the average American citizen. Banks do things like figuring out profit centers. From 2006 to 2008, bank revenues, otherwise known as profits, for such so-called consumer charges, otherwise known as profit centers, went up 35%. And here's one to scare the life out of the, you intellectual intelligentsia elites. You know, remember a long time ago when we talked about who reads and what they read in this country, and it was a really creepy low number. Yeah. On average, a U.S. household now spends twice as much on overdraft fees as it does on books. Yeah. There are two bills in Congress, if you want to jot this down and let your senators and member of the House know that you support them. And that is S-1799 and H-R-3904. Both of those bills would require consumer consent before being enrolled in an overdraft protection policy. It would also cap fees so that they more closely resemble the bank's real expenses. And they would also stop reordering of charges that would incur more fees. Nice work if you can get it, huh? What a racket. We got big rackets that completely destroy our national financial infrastructure. Think credit default swaps, housing bubbles, mortgage shenanigans. Big stupid wars in faraway places where we have no business waging them. We have captured recently terrorists in America who came from that region. Really? Give it to me straight, Doc. We can take it. Because otherwise, when you just say the same crap that George W. Bush said, it just sounds like, oh, crap. So we got those kind of scams. We got the big-time Wall Street scams. And then while we're following those, they're absolutely sucking us dry on the very means by which we otherwise spend our money. This is cradle-to-grave ripoff, isn't it? Remember back in the day when a kid got old enough, because I was one of those kids, get taken to the bank or the credit union and you'd open up a savings account and you'd say, we're going to put $5 a week in. And you're going to learn to keep up with your bank book. And then when you got your first job and all of that, it's all out the window. Because now all you are is a little living, breathing profit center for the banks. And it's sickening. And it's not necessarily you, although they make you feel like it, it's not necessarily you being a bad financial manager of your own household budget. It's because you get trapped inside the trap that the banks deliberately set for you, whereby they can suck a little more money out of your hide. Creepy, huh? Frustrating? Yes. Infuriating, most assuredly. So, with all of that in hand, we're gonna sort of lighten up a little bit this evening. Here in a few minutes, about 10 or 11 minutes, we're going to be talking with rockin' eco-hero Steve Trash. Steve is a personal friend of mine. And he's got some ideas for what you can do for a youngster in your life at Christmas that I personally think is a great idea. And we'll be talking about that at the bottom of the hour. Let's see. I do have a blinking light here, however. Let's see if that person is still on the line. Oh, they gave up. What we're talking about, though, is from a company called Imagiplay. And Imagiplay is a pretty cool company. Imagiplay does toys that are eco-friendly, non-toxic, and sustainable. which, if not poisoning your kid with some manifestation of your regard for said kid, is important to you, is, as Martha Stewart would say, a good thing. And so Imagiplay is behind Steve's idea, Steve Trash's idea, for a green magic set. This is just so cool. I want one. We'll let Steve talk more about it. It's a great idea. It is just simply a great idea. So that's where we're going this evening. It's not the only place we're going. By the way, the Green Magic set is available at Amazon.com. And if you just look up Green Magic set, you'll go right there. It's just that easy. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to go into this Front Porch Friday, and I don't know where you're going to want to go. It's, you know, sort of fluid. On the other hand, you know, people worry about their weight during the holiday season. I mean, who are we kidding? We worry about our weight all year long because we've got an entire consumer complex dedicated to telling us our teeth aren't white enough, we're too fat, we're too thin, we're too tall, we're too short, we stink, our hair is either stringy or greasy, our face is either matte or too shiny, and there is an entire industry bent on capitalizing on all of that dissatisfaction, that artificial dissatisfaction that they gin up within us about ourselves. One of those companies is, of course, Unilever. And Unilever is the manufacturer and distributor of SlimFast. Put the SlimFast away. Leave the SlimFast alone. It may be toxic. As of today, Unilever has announced a recall of the canned, ready-to-drink version of SlimFast. Unilever also, by the way, makes Skippy peanut butter and Ragu pasta sauce. And they said, and I will rely on our resident knower of things like this. You in the chat room, Lottie? No, I don't see Lottie in the chat room. Oh, well, so I'll have to just be ignorant for a while. Anyway, it turns out that these cans of SlimFast may be contaminated with something called Bacillus cereus. Now, Bacillus cereus is a bacterium that has the possibility for causing diarrhea, nausea, and vomiting. Well, happy holidays. The recall affects 10 million cans distributed in the United States. And here's the fun part. Unilever, this is the way it's reported, okay? This is from the story itself. Unilever said it is still in the process of identifying and correcting the production problem that led to the contamination. The FDA, which was notified by Unilever of the possible contamination on December 2nd, is currently investigating the company's production facility in Covington, Tennessee. See, when you see something that says Unilever said it's still in the process of identifying and correcting the production problem that led to the contamination, what that means is we don't have any idea how this stuff that's making people sick got into the stuff that we're selling. But, of course, we are a non-union shop, and there's not much way that any, you know, and so our people are wage slaves, and therefore not prone to telling us if there's a problem, because when people tell us we're a problem and we're a non-union shop, we usually just get rid of them. What's recalled? All SlimFast ready-to-drink products served in cans, regardless of flavor. I'm sorry, the Dutch chocolate and the strawberry banana and the orange pineapple, they're all possibly contaminated with something that would give you nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. It doesn't matter what flavor they are. It doesn't matter what their best buy date is. It doesn't matter what their lot code or their UPC number that are currently in retail distribution centers are, on store shelves, in warehouses, or in consumer homes. They're all subject to recall. If you own any Slim Fast in a can ready to drink, it's been recalled. Yeah, that's what we're dealing with. So no Slim Fast, no cheating with the Slim Fast for you over the holiday season. Forget about it, as the saying goes. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break, and we will come back with a conversation with rockin' eco hero Steve Trash, and learn a little bit about the Green Magic set, which I think is very, 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 very cool. Is that okay by you? Cool. All right, you're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to the Horn, and we will be right back. No, wrong song, stupid Windows Media Player. Okay, let's find another one. Try again. Yeah, this will work. Yeah, right at half past the hour. You know me. I love a good thematic bumper. The Cars. Magic. This is The Horn. This is Friday on the Front Porch. A little bit of lighthearted conversation before we get into the serious and cranky stuff. On the line with me right now, rockin' eco hero and good old chum o' mine, Steve Trash.
Hey, Bob. And thank you, by the way, for sharing the bumper correlation with Steve Trash. I was listening to the bumper, and I didn't even get the joke. And now I get it. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the idiot on the phone. Thank you.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, man, it's so good to talk to you, especially with the holiday season coming up. I understand you've been burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah, I live in Frog Pond, Alabama, population 76 when I'm not home. I just got back from Las Vegas, Nevada. I was out there doing the International Fair, International Association for Fairs and Expos. Basically, it's a booking conference. I love working in Vegas because there are so many high-quality shows out there. I just love seeing those really high-quality shows. And before that, I had like 40 days coming off my fair schedule. I had 40 dates in a row, 40 straight days of working. So I'm about ready to take a couple of days off.
I'd say so. So do you get to hang out in Frog Pond for a little bit?
Oh, yes, I do. As a matter of fact, first thing I do, I landed on my shores here in lovely downtown Frog Pond and grabbed my three Australian Shepherds, and we went for a nice little walk. It's cold out here today, though. It's in the 30s, so I started a fire, and we were sitting
Holy cow, that's actually colder than what it is here.
It's cold, man. Hey, if we had some chestnuts, we would be roasting them right now.
Oh, I can well imagine. Tell me, as you work your circuit, and you are a hard-working entertainer, Steve, just because issues environmental matter so much to us here at the Horn, are you sensing a changing current or a changing of the undercurrent in this country where environmental matters are concerned?
I would not even say sensing. I would say sensed. It is in past tense. Something happened within the last, I'm going to say, 2 years or so ago. At that time, what really pushed, what really got the tipping point tipped, Malcolm Gladwell, thank you, what really pushed the thing over was when business recognized that it was a pressing issue that we actually build a sustainable society. Now, for years and years, lots of people, just regular folks, have known that was important. But until business gets something, frankly, in this particular world, you're not going to be really able to transform it. But now you have young people who are in boardrooms, actually making decisions, corporate boardrooms and, you know, small business people that go, you know what, we need to make a lot of money in our business, but we also make sure that it is a sustainable business as well. And so that's a really long-winded answer to, heck yeah, man, it's definitely out there. I mean, two years ago, I went to the Advertising Age Green Summit in New York City. Basically, it was put on for all of the big corporate advertisers, and I just went as a little old Steve Trash, you know, rockin' eco hero, just to see what these people had to say. And it was very much beyond just sort of greenwashing. I mean, you could tell a lot of these people at the top actually got the notion that they needed to be building their businesses in a sustainable way, particularly with the with respect to energy, but really with everything, waste reduction, energy consumption. The model that we have now is a model that won't last forever. And businesses, they want to last forever, so they have to start looking at ways to switch.
Well, you know, you work in particular with young folks a substantial part of the time, and I would suspect that in so doing, you're able to reach at a ground level things that the folks in the corporate boardrooms can't, because
yeah.
if you're one of the silk suit types at, sitting on the board, or you know, CEO, CFO, COO, MOO, MICKE, MOUSE.
Yeah.
You know, you can afford solar panels, you can afford a wind turbine on your house in the Hamptons, but there's stuff that happens on the street that kids can get their minds around, and that's really the heart and soul of the magic that you do, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, here's the thing. That's a really good observation, because the average person doesn't have the money to do that. But what we can do, and like the average kid, it's strange, when children watch my show, because I come in and basically I do a green magic show, and I teach kids about waste reduction, I teach kids about ways to interface themselves with the environment in a little better fashion, right? But they come away from my show actually empowered, because young kids, I'm going to say my biggest fans are like, I'm going to say 7, 8, 9, and 10 years old. But you have some younger fans and some older. But those kids are at that age where they're kind of empowered to do something about something, you know? And if you inspire them, if you say, hey, look, you know, you need to make sure that your neighborhood, this school is cleaned up. You need to get on the whole litter thing. Because when they get on the litter thing, they then understand that, oh, okay, you know, the litter, that's cosmetic. We need to even go deeper. We need to go and take that litter and maybe even recycle it so we can actually use those resources over and over and over again. And that then leads them to this thought of, well, maybe since we're using resources more wisely, maybe we should even start using less energy. Let's figure out ways to use less energy. So 25 years ago when I started, I think I was out there saying exactly the same thing I'm saying now, and I really hope that some of those young people heard my message, and they were a lot smarter than me, and they ended up being scientists, and they ended up being, you know, college professors, and they actually went out, and they ended up being business people, and actually went out and are able to implement all of this stuff that I've sort of been a cheerleader for so long, because really all I can do is inspire people. Until recently, because we actually made something for public consumption other than a live performance called My Green Magic Set.
Exactly. And I was just headed that way, Steve, because, you know, I'm proud to say that you and I have known each other for a very long time.
And a really long time.
and I remember long ago when we all used to ride our dinosaurs to school, when you started getting into magic. And when I saw that you were putting together the Green Magic Set, something sort of clicked inside my head where I thought, you know, the same magic that happened for Steve, he's trying to help make happen for other kids.
Right.
And is that part of what undergirds the Green Magic Set?
Without a doubt. And what's cool about it is I don't think a Green Magic Set could have existed when I was a child, and that is because the general consciousness did not exist out there that you needed to be greener, you know? And, you know, you can sort of put quotations and marks around the green. Most magicians, they really don't care anything about greenness, but kids really, really do. And greenness, let's say greenness includes being smarter about the energy that you use, protecting animals, protecting the environment, you know, in your neck of the woods, you know, protecting the mountains, protecting the air, the land, the water. Kids have a really nice consciousness of that now. So what if you could provide something like a magic set where kids would already be interested in it because, you know, there are secrets there and it gives you a little power, you know how to do the tricks. But at the same time, the magic tricks were both sustainably made and sustainably themed. So the three magic tricks that we have in the Green Magic Set are actually made of sustainably harvested bamboo, which I'm sure your listeners know is actually a grass rather than even a wood. And the other two magic tricks in this set, and including the box, is made of rubber wood. Again, a sustainably harvested wood.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Well, the sustainably harvested, the rubber wood, basically, you know, back in the day when rubber was actually harvested from rubber trees rather than synthetically produced,
right.
Real rubber comes from trees. It's a sap that comes off. Well, the trees don't live forever. And so what happens is when this tree lives its life out, the tree is then harvested. Once it's lived its life out, given all the sap it's going to give, it's harvested. And that is what our boxes and two of the magic tricks are actually made of, is that sustainably harvested rubber wood. It took me a really long time. I had this notion for a Green Magic Set over 15 years ago, and I couldn't find a partner to manufacture anything green. I found a number of people that said, oh, well, let's just tell people that it's green, and oh, that was, I'm sorry. First of all, that's immoral. Second of all, it's just stupid.
And third, it's lying, and you know, all those things we were taught not to do, interestingly enough.
That's right. That would be lying. So I actually was sort of, it's been maybe 2 years ago, I happened to see a little news blurb on a company called Imagiplay. And for your listeners, really, especially if they have young children, because I'm probably the top end age-wise of the products that Imagiplay makes, but it's Imagiplay. Imagiplay. Toys with Integrity is the name of their company. They're out of Boulder, Colorado. Basically, all of the toys that they make are sustainably manufactured. They're made of wood. They only work in wood. I think they may work in a few other items. They may have a little bit of harvested rubber. Their items are really cute, really identifiable. So I approached them and I said, how would you like to make the world's first green magic set? And by the way, that is verified. I called all of my magic historian friends and I said, could you research something for me? And they said, sure. I said, I want to make sure we're saying this is the first green magic set, and I want to make sure that that is true, and it's absolutely true. There have been a couple of people that put together green magic ideas, books, but nobody ever actually manufactured a green magic set until this Imagiplay Steve Trash green magic set combo came along. And we released it just at the beginning of this year. In fact, we were selected by the folks at Toy Fair, which is where all the big toy manufacturers come together to sell and showcase what they've got. We were selected as one of the, I think they called us Fairest of the Fair or something like that. Basically, it's a, hey, this looks like a cool product that kids would like to have kind of list.
Tell me, just reaching into your own experience, Steve, what happens in a young mind when something like prestidigitation comes along? What does it do for you? I mean, you mentioned the empowering, you know, I know a secret, that kind of thing.
Right.
What are you hoping a kid who gets his or her hands on the green magic set will get out of it? Obviously fun. But does it also incorporate the idea of the recycle, reuse, sustainability? Is that also there?
Actually, even goes a little further than that. This particular one, the green magic set, features three magic tricks, and each one is green themed. I'll give you an example. We have three tricks in it. One is called the Magical Energy Cube, one is called Eco Wands, and one is called Pollution Paddle. And each one of those sort of gives away what the actual theme is. As an example, Magical Energy Cube. Imagine in your mind that you've got a cube that has sources of energy. Let's say geothermal, and it has a little bitty volcano on one side of the cube. On another side, it's got a little bitty oil drop, and so that represents oil. On another side, it's got a sun, which represents solar energy. On another side, it's got some waves, which represent water power, hydropower. So each one of the sides of the cube represents an energy source. You're a volunteer from the audience. The kids volunteer in the audience. This volunteer puts this cube into a box. It's absolutely opaque. No one can see through it. The magician kid thinks about it, and the energy source that the volunteer from the audience has selected, the kid is able to read their mind. He or she knows which one they selected. Now, that's a clever way of me illustrating to children that there are other energy sources other than oil. We've got, wind, we've got water, we've got geothermal, and I think that to really follow your line of questioning, they might even at that early age begin thinking of other sources of energy that we don't even conceive of right now. I mean, wouldn't it be cool if you grew up with the green magic set, and you just grew up knowing that, you know, on one level, there are lots of different sources of energy, and on another level, you knew that animals and people are totally and completely connected, and on another level, you knew that in the natural world, there's no such thing as a way. You can't throw anything away in nature. Like you say you're going to throw your garbage away, can't happen, because everything in the natural world is connected. All three of those themes, I know one trick that's the first theme, one trick that is the second theme, and one trick that is the third theme. And I would love it if kids learned these magic tricks, presented them, and then actually took those notions, those ideas and principles that we've illustrated and actually used them in the rest of their life. And I've been in it long enough that I know that that happens. When you, you know, when you share good, empowering information with children, they take it and they run with the ball.
And they are, and they go places that you and I have never, ever even begun to dream of, Steve. That's the...
That's absolutely right. That's right. And, you know, that's what you can hope for. I mean, every person hopes that their children are richer, happier, more successful than they are. And I have hundreds of thousands and millions of children.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And I tell you what, I can tell, you know, this is an idea, Steve, that's been 15 years in the making, as you describe it. And, right. And there's obviously passion and intelligence and integrity behind it. Let me give you just from our experience here in the hills, one more good reason that something like the Green Magic Set needs to be out there, and one more good reason why caring, concerned friends, neighbors, relatives should perhaps give a Green Magic Set to a child instead of, say, that god-awful bunny suit from A Christmas Story. Here in West Virginia, starting about fourth grade, which would be about the age of the kid who might begin to play with the Green Magic Set.
Right.
The coal industry, and I'll send you some links. I think I'll try to find a link to the coloring book so that you can be appropriately horrified. The coal industry goes into the public schools in West Virginia and starts indoctrinating children on why coal is good and why coal is good for you and why those environmentalist tree huggers are going to try to take daddy's job away.
Right.
It's nasty in the extreme, and frankly, it verges on child abuse. And so, you know, just in case you were wondering, there is this serves a much, much higher purpose than perhaps either you or I know, Steve.
Well, it is also, it's good science, right? I mean, what we really want our children to get is good science. And that's one of the things that I always steered away from in my performances were being very politically oriented.
You can't do that. Right, you can't do that with a kid.
Well, here's the thing. What you can do with a child is actually teach them how the ecological world works. You can say, I mean, as an example, let's just assume that coal is an energy source, which it is a very large energy source because there are enormous reserves of it beneath the surface of the land. You can say that coal is a big energy source, and it could be harvested locally, right, which is true. The other argument would be, of course, and this would be ecological, would be that there's no way to actually capture the carbon that's released when the coal is burned, and then you have all the other issues with actually capturing it. So a kid that understands ecology and understands the air and the land and the water and the science of how the biosphere actually works is going to be a kid that can actually make a much better decision, not being a scientist, but actually just being a voter, you know? A kid that understands
exactly
and understands ecology and the interconnections that exist among all living creatures, and for that matter, unliving creatures, you know, the rocks just as much and the soil just as much as the living creatures. That's what I've tried to do my whole career, is in a funny and entertaining way get kids to understand how the world actually works. And then at that point, those children will grow up and they will make their own decision. You know, it's you're fighting the good fight, because really it's in a corporation's own best interest that's built into their charter, but the only reason they really exist is for shareholders, profit.
Profit generation, sure.
And profit generation is not a negative thing at all. I mean, that is what allows us to have jobs. I mean, that's it. However, a corporation's only purpose is that. And, I mean, there is a little bit of a movement out there, like I can't remember his name now, but the guy that runs our own Whole Foods market, his notion would be that you need to have compassionate capitalism. And the notion would be that you have to take in sustainability into your decisions that you make into the boardroom. The only decision is not just shareholder profit. You have other decisions that come into into the mixture. Now, frankly, that's way over my head. You know, I don't have, and I do have a corporation, but I'm one guy in my corporation. You know, so I don't really have to run things past other people. I just simply do it the most ethical way that I can. I mean, and I'll just to be perfectly honest and straight up front, the Green Magic set, I looked all over the United States to see if we could get it made here, and it's $29 as it is to put three wooden tricks and a box in this thing. I couldn't find anybody that could even make it for what we sell it for in the United States. Not one person. I tried many, many. So what we did is we found a family in China that in Magic Play had worked with for years and years. I mean, they go over all the time. Not like it's a factory. These are actually, it's a family. They
yeah, nobody chained to the sewing machine.
Oh, no. And they're related, and the owner of the Magic Play goes over there, I think at least two or three times a year to visit, you know, to see the new products, see what they've got going. And you could even go as far as to say that they're artisans. I mean, they are woodworking people. They're making these things by hand. I mean, they're using machines, obviously, but even a saw is considered a machine.
Sure.
But, yeah, so we did go to actually great pains to make sure that not only the sustainability includes how you treat people that are manufacturing these things.
Without a doubt.
How you pay people. It would be fantastic to hire somebody locally to make this product for us. But if you can't, the second best choice is to treat somebody in a fair trade situation, someone from around the globe in a growing economy, give them a fair wage so they can give you a product. It's a very complex equation to try to have it made here and then sell it here. For a lot of manufacturers, it's actually very complicated.
Oh, I don't doubt it in the least, Steve. Tell me this: based on the sales as they go forward, and knowing how you're having a sense of how your mind works, are you thinking about Magic Set 2 or supplemental tricks or stuff like that?
Right. Well, I'm so heavily involved in marketing these. I have part of one of your earlier questions. My touring career is so on fire. You know, I mean, I'm getting calls from the most ridiculous corners of the planet to come and do the Steve Trash Green Magic Show. That I actually haven't had very much time for the Green Magic set. Your listeners might be interested to know that I have a sideline, and I actually make movies. I actually optioned the movie rights to a novel recently called When the Buddha Met Bubba. It's a novel that came out in September.
A mutual friend of ours told me about this. Yes. Please continue. Yes.
Well, it was written by John Lee. He's the author. He's an Alabama guy. And I did not know him, and I heard about it, and honestly, I thought the title was hilarious, so I said, I need to go read this. So I tracked him down, and I chased him over to good old Mentone, Alabama, up at the base of your Appalachian Mountains, and we had a marvelous conversation. I said, look, I think I can make a great movie out of this novel. And he said, okay, well, let's see if you can. And so we've been rewriting the novel into the form of a screenplay, which is a huge pain in the tail. It is fun, but it's also very different. And I mean, your listeners have probably read novels and then seen the movie. They had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah,
it's because they're apples and oranges. You know, one's a visual art form and one's an intellectual.
Forrest Gump comes to mind.
Yeah, the Forrest Gump is massively different. Great movie, great story. But two different, totally different animals, two very different animals. So not only do I spend my time touring, but I spend my time actually, and this is going to sound horrible, trying to make movie deals.
Call me, babe. We'll have lunch.
That's right. Exactly right. I go to these, you know, film festivals like South by Southwest and those kind of film festivals, and you're hobnobbing with those folks to see if you can get funding for a project. I mean, like my project, there's no possibility I think I could make this movie for less than, you know, $5 or $10 million. I mean, it's a lot of money. And movies are an enormous, enormous risk. I think people usually only see the movies that make big money as the only, their only picture is, oh, that made so much money. Well, three quarters of movies all lose money. You know, that's why studios make a certain number of movies because they know that most of their movies will lose, and so they've got to have that one-hit movie. That would explain why they have such, you know, big sort of blockbuster movies, but you kind of watch them and you go, that's a terrible movie. Well, they needed a movie on the docket to make back all of the money for all the other ones that lost money. So that's one of the things that I do, as well as working on the Green Magic set. For your listeners, by the way, if they're interested in getting a Green Magic set for maybe a niece or a nephew, I did a really special thing since I do have my own production company, a digital production company. There is a code, a secret code, inside the magic set. And the secret code, you can then go to my website on stevetrash.com and type in the secret code, and the code is only inside the magic set. You can't get it any other way. When you type this in, there is a video on my website that shows both how the trick should look when it is presented, and then I actually teach how to perform the magic trick. So you get written instructions like I grew up seeing, and then you actually get video that can help the child actually make it through.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat because we have visual kids nowadays. It's a very visual world we live in. And the cool thing is you can play it over and over and over again. You go, well, man, I'm not sure. How am I supposed to be holding my hand here? You know, how do I pull the string? How do I tilt the wand up? Here's an example. This is one of the tricks. I actually found this magic trick in a book written in 1907 by the inventor of sawing a lady's hat. It's called the Selbit paddle, and we renamed it the pollution paddle. In essence, it's a tiny little wooden paddle about 4 inches long, and the child holds the wooden paddle in one hand. There are three holes drilled in it. The toothpick is put in one hole. The toothpick represents pollution, by the way. With a magical wave, the pollution moves from one hole to the other. And with another magical wave, it moves to a different hole. And the storyline is that in the final analysis, it's probably best if you don't even make the pollution in the first place. Well, that trick is complicated to write out and explain. It's much easier to understand when you just see somebody do it on video. So when you buy the magic trick, you go to the Steve Trash website, type in the little thing, and sure enough, there's Steve Trash actually teaching you how to do the trick yourself.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Is it? Now, I'm looking at it as we talk, Steve. I'm looking at it over at Amazon.com. Is that the only outlet for the Green Magic set, or are there others?
There are others. You definitely can go to Amazon.com, and at this point, that's probably the fastest. However, you can buy directly from the Magic Play. And Imagiplay, you just go to Imagiplay.com. I can spell that for you. It's Imagiplay.com. And it's like imagination and play put together. They like to build thoughtful toys is kind of the idea. You can also, there are other sources, too. You can actually buy, let's see, Imagiplay, Amazon. If you actually have a local toy store, they can get it. Any toy store can get it. Whole Foods Market actually carries them.
Really?
You have to order them. But yeah, they may not have them in stock, but yeah, we're actually both in Barnes & Noble, and we're in Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods is different because it doesn't have one national buyer. They have regional and local buyers.
Right, right.
Each individual store is responsible for its own purchases. So you may have a local Whole Foods and they may not have it, but they could certainly get it because we're on their list. And the same thing would apply to Barnes & Noble. I definitely know we're on the list because they purchased. I don't know what our first numbers were, but I know that the first shipment of the Green Magic set sold out because we're into the second shipment of it. I don't know what those numbers were, but I know that we're definitely on the second grouping.
That's amazing. I hope that folks who have, and you're saying what, about 8, 9 years old is age appropriate?
Yeah. 8 and 9 is perfectly appropriate. If you have a particularly sharp 6 and 7 year old, they could definitely get something out of it, but they're going to have a lot of trouble reading the instructions. Magic, although it is beautiful for children to watch, magic is sometimes difficult for children to perform because there are so many things happening, you know, all at the same time kind of thing. You know, you're pretending you do one thing while you actually do, you know, another kind of thing. There are lots of advantages to learning magic tricks as a child, though. One thing that I learned, I became very good at following linear instructions because adjectrics. You read them from a book or from an instruction sheet, and you must do them in that order, or the magic trick doesn't work. And so I became really good at following straight, flat out written instructions, because I've been, you know, reading magic instructions since I was a kid. Because, you know, video didn't really exist when I was a kid back, you know, with the cave.
Yeah, everything was carved in stone. The books were so heavy.
Well, you know, those may never come back, you know, with all of the Kindle and all of that crazy magic.
No, I know.
I can't really predict the future. Other than the future that I can predict is that I'm actually quite positive about our outlook. An example would be, I just got a call day before yesterday to perform in Dubai. And why did they want to eat trash? It was because they were putting in a green shopping center, right? And who would you go to? Of course you go to Steve Trash, right?
Well, absolutely.
To open this thing in Dubai, and I got a call from Portugal about a month ago, same thing. It's because if you want a green entertainer, I've done it for so long, and frankly, I'm the best. You call the guy that knows. I mean, I live in an earth-burned house. You know, my wife and I have a compost bin out back that's a, you know, clawfoot bathtub. We have a, you know, tankless water heaters. We have a thermal mass house, you know. I mean,
in other words, you're walking the walk and talking the talk?
Darn straight, man. I mean, come on, Bob. Is there any other way?
You know what, Steve? You were kind enough. I said, let's talk 15 minutes, and it's old home week, of course, and we've been at it for 30 now. But let me just say from my end, what a beautiful thing that I think it is that what you're doing in Frog Pond, because I had a recent opportunity to have a conversation with a fairly heavy hitter who was telling me about, you know, his house in Colorado and you know, his solar panels and his wind turbines and, you know, and the passive solar and the geothermal and all of that really, really cool stuff.
Right.
And I looked at him and I said, you know, that's beautiful. I'm glad that's happening in Colorado. But if you really want to see the sea change, then it needs to start happening in places like, and it just came out of my mouth because it's the two places that matter most to me, Alabama and West Virginia.
Yeah, right.
And you're making it happen there. And so, you know, little golf clap for Steve Trash. That's just awesome.
Well, I'd like to pat myself on the back, but I'm only a part of a wave that is just simply a consciousness. It's just a consciousness wave. I mean, you'd be fascinated. I mean, here, I don't really know West Virginia, but here in Alabama, there are quite a number of things that are happening. Over in Huntsville, which you know is a fairly high-tech town, they have a number of green festivals that are focused exclusively on the technology of green buildings and in green energy technologies. So I'm so positive about the outlook for the planet, because technology is catching up with people's ideas, and ideas are actually catching up with the technology that exists. I heard, the creator of, what is the name of that car? The Lotus? The electric...
Tesla.
Thank you, the Tesla, right. I have no idea why I forgot that, because I just... got to sit in.
Yeah, Lotus has come with kilos of cocaine in the trunk. I mean, that's how I keep them separate.
Okay, well, so, yeah, I definitely don't want to purchase one of those.
Right. We all remember John DeLorean. No, that's a John DeLorean that comes with it. Okay, now we're square.
That's right. The John DeLorean comes with the actual guy. With the Tesla, I was listening to Elon Musk, who is the owner and president of Tesla, and he was saying that this electric car, by the way, for those that don't know, the Tesla, of course, is a sports car that is completely electric powered.
Oh, wow, is it?
It will outrun any sports car on the road. It is a smoking foxy car. However, it's about $125,000. But Elon Musk just said he's introducing a moderate range line of sedans. And they're coming out now. Next year, they're going to come out. And they're in the $40,000 to $50,000 range. Now, mind you, that's more expensive than I can pay, but he's getting it in that range where his next thing is sell enough of these medium range sedans out there, and guess what? You move into the $10,000 and $20,000 car range, and then that.
It worked for Henry Ford.
That's right. It did work for Henry Ford. It's exactly the same model. He even alluded to that, is that the really rich people funded the purchase for other people to be able to buy a car, right? I mean, Elon Musk knew this right up front, building his car. But here's the thing, Bob. We are switching to a C economy, S-E-E. It's a sustainable energy economy.
Yes.
There's no way to turn it around. It is what the future holds, and it holds that because even the developing world gets it. In fact, I might even say they get it a little more, but India, even China, is hopping on that thing going, you know what? We need to be sustainable about our choices. It's actually harder for us in the developed world just because we've done it the old way for so long.
Oh, I know. You know, what you just reminded me of something, Steve. I'm sure you're familiar with the magnificent film Gandhi.
Absolutely.
And there is that scene where Gandhi says, until Indian people make Indian cloth for Indian people to wear, we will be forever a subservient people.
Yeah.
And, of course, that just drove the British Empire crazy. because, you know, they had this whole unsustainable, consumerist, export-based mercantilist model where they made the cloth, they shipped it to India, India bought it, and thereby propped up empire.
Right.
But what you're saying is very much true, because when India and China realized, I mean, China is buying ungodly amounts of coal from Australia and the United States. I mean, you talk about unsustainable. Can you imagine blowing up a mountain in West Virginia, putting it on train cars, taking it to the Atlantic coast, loading it on literally a slow boat to China, and sending it all the way around the planet where they set fire to it and send it back to us as poison?
And sell the products that they made out of it back to us.
Right.
You know, using that same energy.
But if all of that stays home...
Yeah.
Then they've got a sustainable economy, and they can become prosperous on their own without buying the coal from Australia and the United States. And I mean, I'm a coal, mm-hmm. Coal focus, but that's exactly what you're talking about, I think.
Right. Well, here's the thing. I mean, here's the thing about history. If people are happy and healthy and wealthy and wise, you know what? They tend to blow each other up a lot less. You know, if you've got a sustainable economy where things are pretty darn good at home, you're not going to be so pissed off at other people, other countries, et cetera. So I think moving towards a sustainable economy, which has sort of the model of the World Wide Web, this would be that you have these little bitty pockets of power, like a little bitty desktop computer. And you generate energy here, and I generate energy over there, and I have this ability to make energy over here. And we're all connected in this web. So the model for energy generation, I think, is really similar to the model for the Internet. You know, all of these connected little bitty stations. The old school model was we had one big supercomputer that fed everybody. The big supercomputer goes down, nobody has energy, right?
Right.
So I don't think that's the energy model for the future, and it's definitely not a sustainable model. And both my gut and my head say it's all headed in that new direction.
And I think your gut and your head are both tapped into some significant reality, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just at the IAFE, you know, I told you, in Vegas, and I saw the most extraordinary thing. I mean, look, Bob, if people at fairs, county fairs and state fairs, if they understand that they should be greening their fairgrounds by doing things like buying portable solar collectors, so if people have electric cars, they can plug those up, or portable solar collectors so they can charge their golf carts that they use on the fairgrounds, or they can charge their walkie-talkies that they use, or they have a tent. It has fabric that is flexible, and this flexible fabric actually has solar PV solar collectors in there, and they can generate electricity there. You know, or they bring in an amusement ride, you know, an amusement company that puts together the rides, and this amusement company buys all LED lights which, of course, an LED light compared to, say, an incandescent bulb saves, like, 95% of the energy consumption.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, yeah. And imagine how much energy you're saving by bringing, say, that amusement company in. And I know those exist. I was talking to the guy yesterday. So fairs across the country get that, and fairs are run by people like you and me. You know what I mean? Just regular people, and their customers are just regular people like you and me, too. So that whole green message is going through our society. It's permeating our society. And you know what? When we come out of the doldrums of this crazy downturn in the economy, you better look out, man.
Because then it's all going to take off. Steve, I want to before we ring off, and I have a feeling you and I could do 2 hours easy. And we ought to do this more often, except for the fact that you're busy in places like Portugal and Dubai, for heaven's sakes. And the phone bill from there would just be murder.
I'll talk to you anytime. You ask really good questions, and I'm a blabbermouth, so it's a good combination.
Oh, absolutely. This makes for great radio, and that's what I wanted to share with you. Our audience here at the Horn is a little bit more plugged in and a little bit more activist oriented than I'd say your average radio audience. And our buddy Jude from out in the Great Northwest just dropped a note, and she said, "Your dialogue with Steve reminds me again how vital it is to take time engaging in good human dialogue, which is occurring as you speak with him and he with you. It reminds us all collectively to continue to live with and for those we love with even more clarity, understanding, care, and focus. Thank you and peace."
Wow. Jude is obviously a writer. Way to go, Jude. Bob, I don't think I can say anything any better than Jude just did. I think I'll put an exclamation point on what Jude just said.
Do please. And thank you, Steve. And I hope we'll sell a few magic kits. And I hope that there will be a few kids with some lives changed. I'll keep up with the Facebook updates. You're available on Facebook, of course.
Sure. I'm the only Steve Trash there. I'm also on Twitter too. I'm Green Steve Trash.
Green Steve Trash on Twitter, so folks can follow you and your exploits and see what's on your mind. And hopefully, like I said, hopefully we'll sell a few boxes and change a few kids' worlds, and folks can let you know about that in return. Steve, travel safely and be well, and say hello to everybody down there that you know I love so dearly, and have the happiest of holiday seasons.
Right back at you, Bob, and thanks for letting me talk with your listeners.
Oh, it's a joy, an absolute joy. Steve Trash, take care. Steve Trash, rockin' eco hero. You can find the Green Magic Set at Amazon.com. You can also find it at Imagiplay.com, Imagiplay.com, as well as Barnes & Noble. And Whole Foods can even get their hands on them. So if you've got a youngster with an inquiring mind and you'd like to, and you think this would be something that might expand that inquiring mind, we're talking about $29.99, and among other things, Amazon says it ships free. And you know what? As opposed to some video game or some other gimcrack, maybe think about this. Don't maybe, do think about this. Because this has, even though it's a magic set, it's got a boatload of world-changing reality inside it. And in this ever-so-unreal world, you just can't beat that. So it's about 14 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here in the Appalachians in the Eastern time zone. And we're going to take a little break. And yeah, this just comes to mind when I hear things like Steve was talking about the stuff that's out there that this world can be if only we will help midwife it into its existence. We'll come back with your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Direct dial is 304-658-3333.
Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
We'll be right back. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, well, it's 21 minutes after the hour, but it is still in the second hour, technically, so I guess we're okay with the powers that be. We try not to mess with the mechanics of the universe too much around here. What a great conversation. And, yeah, I know, I'm guilty. I love talking to folks from folks that I knew growing up, and just how can I say this? And I know everybody is fond of home, but I swear there is something utterly magic. Yeah, I know. We were talking about magic, but there's something utterly magic about that little. Northwest corner of Alabama. It's almost like Brigadoon. It's in the water. I don't know. But the creative energies that come out of that area are mind bending. And now I got to go out and try to chase down a copy of When the Buddha Met Bubba, because if Steve thinks enough of the book to try to make a film of it, it's got to be one heck of a book. So I'll try to that's just got to happen. And by all means, if you've got gift giving to do, like I said, for a child who would have their world absolutely opened up before them, I don't think you can do better than the Green Magic set from a Magic Play. And Steve Trash, rockin' eco hero. SteveTrash.com, by the way, is the website. News Ninja Susan is on the line from Oregon. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, let's see. The Ducks will be spending New Year's in Pasadena.
Yes, they will. Go Ducks.
Snicker, snicker, snicker.
Oh, I watched that. You know what? That was an awesome football game.
Oh, yeah, it was an awesome football game. But you got to say go Buckeyes, too, because that's who they're going to be facing. So it's going to be interesting between me and Sue.
Oh, and Guy.
Oh, yes.
this could be the first seriously internecine rivalry that has thus far transpired on the Horn.
Oh, yeah. Going to be interesting. Got a couple little goodies. Your guest, when he was talking about power, you know, little pieces of power here and there, the first thing that popped into my head was, have you ever heard of the SETI project?
The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence? Yes.
Yeah. Where a bunch of people take their off-duty computers and leave them running and turn them into one great big supercomputer.
Right. Yes.
Hey, it works. Don't knock it.
Well, you know, and I've got another little sort of project, and a good while back I talked a little bit about it with Lottie, that we could use in similar fashion as well. And that relates to stuff going on here in the Hills and Hollers. And if that thing ever gets off the ground, that could be very cool too, in that same sense of aggregating aggregating people power via their computers. So yeah. Watch this space, you know.
Okay. Got a couple goodies for you. The first one, also during your chat you mentioned the obscene coal coloring book. That can be found up on our main website on the main page.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to look too far for the link.
Well, I'll find the linky and I'll send it along to Steve for his. I hate to make Steve scream.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm telling you, I realize you're rather busy, and that's where it's easy to find. Also up there though is, are you acquainted with Bernanke's testimony before Congress yesterday?
I only read very, very lightly on it. Most of what I read was the fact that there is a growing movement against reconfirming him pending a full audit of the Fed.
Well, here's why. There's a growing movement against reconfirming him. Unless, of course, you're a Republican. They're beginning to love him to pieces. He's suggesting that they need to go into Social Security and Medicare because, quote, that's where the money is. And he came out and reminded Congress that it has the power to, quote, repeal Social Security and Medicare.
Sure, brother.
Oh,
there I go, spend an hour being lighthearted. And
God. Don't you just love me calling in? I always give you something that'll just run your blood pressure. So I urge everyone, call their senators and congressmen and scream loudly. I've already done it. I'm going to keep it up. But scream a lot. Specifically the Senate, because they're the guys who are confirming this dude. But it doesn't hurt to call the people in the House, too, because they're the ones that handle the money. And anything that has to do with money, they can cut off and therefore let their displeasure be known. But on the lighthearted end, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Michael Brown has a new job.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Is he back with the Arabian Stallion Association?
No, he's got a job teaching school at a college, the University of Denver, to be...
Brownie.
He's going to teach a class on, wait for it, the Patriot Act.
Oh, shut my mouth. I thought it was bad when I saw the dadgum... Eric Prince was going to go be a high school teacher. I was fit to just, you know, well, be tied, I suppose, is a nice non-obscene way of putting it. You know that one, right?
Oh yeah, I saw that one. I said several choice words.
But since you go into the wonderful world of teaching, my particular favorite is the recent lecture by Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez.
Oh, yes.
Who has a teaching job down at Texas Tech. And trust me, the academic rankings of Texas Tech have just fallen through the floor. Granted, they beat the University of Washington in basketball last night, but I don't think that can balance against what Torture Boy Gonzalez is doing to their academic reputation.
They could be inspired to find another George Bush.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull that particular story up real quick because there's a couple of choice quotes in there that'll just make you eat dirt and run rabbits.
Yeah, that's like telling an Italian, you could be the next man to find another Benito Mussolini.
Oh, merciful. You know, I know.
Or killing an Austrian. You could be the next Adolf Hitler.
It's just too much.
Totally clueless.
That's a word for it, yes. Clueless.
They have no idea. Well, I think they know what they've done. They just don't give a fine.
Well, no, they don't, because it involves America, and they're not much on America. Here's the quote. So that I'm not the only one rending my garments and sitting in sackcloth and ashes. Let's see. After months without finding work, former Attorney General Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez landed a teaching job at Texas Tech University earlier this year, where he's now leading a political science class on the executive branch. Oh, I may have a hard time getting through this one, Susan. When Gonzalez's hiring was announced, Texas Tech Chancellor Kent Hance said that the former Bush appointee would, quote, help Texas Tech and ASU prepare our students for success
and to be future leaders in the state of Texas and beyond, unquote.
Apparently,
the student newspaper at Texas Tech is the Daily Toreador.
that's just a little too close to the Daily Torturador.
Gonzalez was recently quoted for some of the inspirational wisdom which he is sharing with his young charges. This is the quote from the newspaper. Gonzalez said he wants to encourage Tech students to have high aspirations, but to realize that success doesn't come overnight. And neither does the next job, apparently.
No.
Dream big, but be patient, he said. You never know when the next George W. Bush is going to come along and give you a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity like he give me, but you have to be patient.
Oh, my aching back.
Jim, the thing that pops
up. You know, I'm just glad when stories like this, Susan, I'm just glad that the tequila bottle's not in arm's reach.
Yeah. But the thing that popped into my head when I heard that is that homoerotic description that he gave of, no, it wasn't that he gave, it was that Cheney gave, or was it Rolfe, of their first sighting of George W. Bush.
John, Marcia! Oh! I know.
I mean, it's just, these people have closeted gay written all over them.
Yeah, and I got some news for the from the church for gay folk later in the evening as well. Susan, I got to roll along. I am told via chat that I have an international call on hold. And
heavens! In that case, love to Agnes and love to everybody else.
Absolutely, hey to Donald, and have a happy weekend.
I shall do so. Bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from one of the happier states in the Union right now, Oregon, where their beloved Ducks are headed to the Rose Bowl. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, nuts. Oh, must have lost him. Doggone it. I was told that it was Truth Seeker from the chat room. If you want to try back, the lines are open now. Let's... Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, good night. Good night. How are you?
I'm well. Is this Truth Seeker?
Yes, Truth Seeker.
Wonderful.
I'm from Holland.
Ah, from Holland. Great.
Yeah, but my English is, I can write it okay and understand it, but I cannot speak it fluently.
You're doing fine so far.
What, excuse me?
I said you're doing fine so far. Don't be put off, because the fact of the matter is most Americans don't speak English fluently either.
Oh, okay. I will keep that in mind.
Do please. How are you this evening?
I'm okay. This year we're doing some, little bit of work, this sort of things, and listening to the horn. Also, watching the chat room. Hi, guys in the chat room, send us. Wish you all the best. And, just listening to the horn, keeping on top of the international news.
Wonder, you know, that it's
America.
It's great. I love it when we have the opportunity to hear from folks abroad, because you have a perspective on the United States that we can't. Being smack dab in the middle of it, we can't have. Tell me, I'm just curious, since George Bush left and Barack Obama came along, there where you are in Holland, has the reputation of the United States risen any at all?
Yes, it has. But with the last news on concerning Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
with this troop search for 30,000 troops.
Yes.
How do you call it? The search?
Yes.
A few people are disappointed, but, yeah. maybe it's necessary, I guess.
Well,
I don't hope that America will stay in Afghanistan. That's the only thing. And with me, there are a lot more people who don't want that.
Well, obviously, Holland is a part of NATO. Are there Dutch troops in Afghanistan? I frankly don't know.
There are Dutch troops. There are a few soldiers have died. Dutch soldiers have died also, and yeah, there are special forces over there, Marines, combat units. There are Dutch troops over there. I keep an eye on the news also.
Listen to
the news, follow the news concerning Afghanistan. I was against the war in Iraq.
Yes.
At the time. And, yeah, from school out, we were protesting against the war. And when Barack Obama won, we were very happy. Very glad.
Well, yeah, I'm curious to see how the rest of the world responds, because I know, for instance, that in the UK there is a rising tide of discontent with Afghanistan and with Iraq.
This also, but that's why I say that I don't hope that the US will stay in Afghanistan. That's a horrible mistake. So Vietnam all over again, you know. I don't know how to pronounce it in English, but it's a very bad idea.
Yeah, I think that is more than ample. It is sometimes maybe we get caught up in too much of an effort to put too fine a point on it, and you have just stated it more than adequately. It is a very bad idea.
Very bad.
Now, let me, if I may, change subjects with you for a moment.
Yes.
You are much closer to Denmark, obviously, than I am here.
Yes.
Is there much excitement in Europe about the upcoming, because it, you know, it starts very soon, the upcoming conference in Copenhagen?
The summit,
on climate change, yes.
The summit on climate change, yes. There's all eyes on the U.S., but no, all eyes on what China and India are going to do also. So.
Well, if anyone has a right to be profoundly concerned with rising sea levels and climate change, it would have to be people in your country.
Yeah, that's true. We're below the sea level.
And you have a concept of the polder there that is radically different from the social concept of the United States. I read about the horrible flooding that took place, I guess, in the 1950s.
That's right, the big flood.
And it changed the way that Holland went about addressing its social needs in many ways.
That's true.
Do you think that concepts like the polder concept are transferable to a nation as large and diverse as the United States?
I think that when I think that Hurricane Katrina.
Yes.
If they organize it differently, maybe, you know, it would have gone the other way, you know. It wouldn't be that horrible, the offense.
Yeah.
Maybe it has to do with social upbringing also, but I think it has to be a combination of those two things, technology and social manifestation, social upbringing.
Because, for instance, well, the area in the Gulf around New Orleans and the Gulf Coast would certainly be suitable to the polder concept, would it not?
Yeah. Yeah, it would be suitable for that. And also the I got it at school. I forgot what do you call it? Part of which is it's not not Dakota, how do you call it, the other parts of America that's also flooding, and it's rains and storms and that sort of thing.
Oh, the Carolina coastline.
Carolina, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. North and South Carolina. What North Carolina, because I know somebody there. It can be done, I think. But it has to be both socially and technological.
If I may ask, what part, just generally speaking, what part of Holland are you in?
I moved to South Holland. I was in North Brabant, but I moved to South Holland.
Okay. Well, it is.
Excuse me.
I was going to say it's a joy to hear from you. I've seen you in the chat room quite often. If I may ask, how in the world did you find the horn?
I found it through Lottie RJ.
Oh, okay, through Lottie.
Yeah, we met each other at Mike Muller's site, and then he invited me, and that's how I came to the horn.
Wonderful.
Great to listen to you guys. Always good information.
Well, by all means, spread the word if you wish. We welcome folks from all over the planet. And
I have told my other colleagues and a few friends over here.
Ah, okay.
School, but they're listening to the podcast.
Well, yeah, because you probably have to stay up rather late to get this broadcast.
Yeah, but I'm doing other things also, you know. Right now I'm doing a little bit of this and that, but I'm busy doing other things also, so a little bit of programming and sort of things. So.
Understood.
Yes, sir.
Understood.
School.
Yeah. So you are.
I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm happy with the horn. I hope you guys stay alive.
We're struggling to, and as long as we can, we will. You're a student then?
Yes, that's true. I work also, but I'm a student.
What do you study?
IT, I think. Hopefully we call it ICT, but you call it IT, information technology.
Excellent. Okay.
And I'm focusing on system management. And a little bit of programming also works for scripts.
Okay. Well, do feel free to share your ideas, your thoughts anytime, and hopefully we'll hear from you again soon.
Yes, I will call from time to time, but maybe it will boost my English.
Your English is fine. I'm having no trouble whatsoever.
Okay.
You know, let's put it this way. Your English is about a million times better than my Dutch. So, yeah, you're doing great.
Thank you.
Thank you very kindly.
Nice show.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
And have a wonderful, wonderful evening and weekend. And like I said, I hope we hear from you soon.
Yes, I will call from time to time.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Calling from Holland, known in the chat room as Truth Seeker. Oh. I just love that kind of interaction. We have marvelous opportunities. It's all a question of whether we use this technology for good, or whether we let it work to our detriment. And I like to think that what we're doing here with the horn is most definitely a usage of the technology for good. And you guys prove that day in and day out and day in and day out. I want to catch up with an email or two that goes back to my night playing hooky Wednesday night, and also goes back toward the end of the program yesterday evening, because I think they are... I don't know. They're two notes that are very similar in sense to each other, and perhaps might give us all a sense for where our senses lie right now with regard to the Afghanistan, the great big howling, honking Afghanistan mistake. The first email goes back to Tuesday night, actually, and I got it late Tuesday and wasn't able to share it on Wednesday because I wasn't here. And it comes from Michael, otherwise known as Kid A, from the chat room. And after hearing the Jason Isbell track that I played and what I said afterward, Michael wrote and said, "You know how much I appreciate that Jason Isbell track you played, however long. But sadly, I gotta say the words rang hollow for me tonight, as did your coda. I mean you no disrespect, my brother, I swear, but I just ain't feeling my freedom tonight, just not feeling it. I mean, if you are, if the majority of the Horn audience is, that's cool. Whatever gets you through the night, as Mike Malloy is so fond of quoting John Lennon. But jumping on board with your liberation thesis would just feel a bit masturbatory to me. I just can't yet bring myself down that road. I don't see what good comes from it. It's not about rolling with Obama, as David might say, or because I give a flying whoop about the Democratic Party per se. I just hate to see us all splintering into a million pieces and becoming a bunch of leftist teabagger Naderites. Yeah, I'd love it if some Green Labor Party were the left party in the U.S. and the Democrats were the right option, but magical thinking ain't gonna make it happen. If we all fall apart, I'm sorry, but like the teabaggers, we will marginalize ourselves and we will be an effing joke just like them. Only worse, we'll be liberal jokes." Michael continues, "I don't have any answers, my friend. I don't know what to do now. I'm pissed as all hell at President Obama tonight. I guess I don't get why anyone is surprised at all, though. I was just really, really hoping he'd break his campaign promises when it came to Afghanistan, given that he is a politician, and they do that occasionally. Supporting Obama in 2008 for me was all about damage control. I never bought into this idea that we were anywhere near fixing things. I don't like these effing calculations any more than the next guy, but I don't buy this, with all due respect, crap that one is voting one's conscience by forfeiting any opportunity to block a power grab by some shit-eating pig-licking who would amp up tenfold any evil a Clinton, Gore, or Obama could ever dream of doing. As an example, any Floridian out there who voted for Nader in 2000, if you can sleep at night based on how you cast your vote, well, I'm glad for you. I just couldn't do it. Could not do it. Some freedom, some liberation. Feel like my hands are bound tighter than ever. So I guess I'll just keep muddling around, trying to hold Obama and the Dems' feet to the fire, yeah, like that'll work, and hope maybe an Obama apologist like me will still be welcome in the chat room. And others can just come all unglued and snipe at callers and call Obama a douchebag in the chat room, yeah, like that'll work, and we can just forfeit the future to a soon-to-be-reunited teabagger repiglican coalition. Sorry for pissing in your inbox, brother. I just feel full of despair, and I don't know who else to reach out to. And please, 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 don't stack this with the hate mail. I love you like a brother, Bob, but I don't do mega dittos. There are a lot of hard choices ahead of us. That's all I know. This isn't hate mail, Bob. This is Tuesday. Bloody Tuesday. Hopeless, Michael. And I don't take issue with a dime's worth of that. I know exactly from whence Michael comes, because most of everything that Michael expressed in that email has found its way around my noggin in the last couple of days. I only offer as a sort of clarification that what I said about being free doesn't mean that we're all going to go off and vote for the Sparkle Pony Party. I just meant that what I meant is that we don't align behind party for the sake of party. That maybe it was a warning shot, because, see, the poor old tired 2009 is going to be over very, very soon. And here comes 2010, and the primary filing deadlines will happen, depending on what state you're in, January, February, March, maybe, I don't know. And the way that you make it, and the way you change things is in the primary system.
and you are absolutely under no obligation whatsoever to support an incumbent Democrat in those primaries. Not that I could impose such an obligation in the first place. And if you are so inclined, you can go out there and find the person who's going to challenge the Democratic incumbent in the primary and get behind that hopefully liberal, progressive, green-oriented, anti-war candidate person and bust your ass for him or her. Because even if you don't win the primary, if you get any sort of substance in numbers whatsoever in the way of primary electoral totals, then a clear message has been sent. Now, whether being a politician, the incumbent will take that message, is another issue entirely. And I know exactly what Michael says about not being surprised at Barack Obama. Absolutely, he can't be. Afghanistan is the right war at the right time, and oh, please. $30 billion, 1,000 American soldiers per one remaining Al-Qaeda fighter in Afghanistan, because there's 100 of them. And we, as liberals of morals and conscience, are once again caught in the damn vice between political expediency, realpolitik, and what? Our consciences? Our morals? According to that horrifying poll of a week or so ago, 40% of Democrats say they're staying the hell home in 2010. And that's the kind of thing that'll wake you up with the flop sweats if you've got an inclination toward any kind of being any kind of political animal. Which brings me to the email that I got last night from our buddy Joe the Foxhole Atheist. Who said, Bob, most of these emails begin with Bob, I really enjoy your optimism, but I think we're at checkmate. And see, this isn't the other side of Michael's coin. This is the milling along the edge of the same side of the coin that Michael's on. I really enjoy your optimism, but I think we're at checkmate. This is unavoidable. We're going to lose any hypothetical Democratic majority in the House and Senate this time around. Obama, regardless of how right-wing he is, will be a one-termer. 40% of Dems are not going to vote in the midterm or next general election, opposed to the 80% of crazies that will vote. Let me just throw this in. Yes, 80% of the crazies will vote, but that's 80% of 20%? Whereas we're talking about 40% of 50%? How does that work out? Somebody do the math on the fly, because I'm not worth it at it. Anyway, Joe continues. For the past 3 years, I've been shouting from my mountaintop, trying to wake people up. In those 3 years, I have found only two types of Americans. There are right-wingers who want to kill the Constitution so they can give more money to the rich and save the embryos. And there are the great masses that don't want to get involved. There is nothing more evil than a good person who refuses to do the right thing. But that is what America is now. The majority of people want the right things. But they refuse to get involved. In short, when the people abdicate their responsibility, they are going to get what they deserve. Let's read that again, just for fun. When the people abdicate their responsibility, they are going to get what they deserve. Since Americans refuse to do the right thing, Joe says, I'm going to show them how bad it can be. I will still be highly active in the primaries. I will never vote Democratic again, but will support an honest independent.
When my community refuses to get off their butts and do the right thing, I will make sure that everyone feels the pain of their inaction. If an honest person is not supported in the primaries, I'm voting Palin Bachman 2012 double batshit crazy with fries to go. I'm tired of cowards. If Americans want to be cowards, they deserve to pay the price for it. I'm going to learn French. Those people know how to keep their government under control. Signed, the Foxhole Atheist. And Joe is not the firstest person to come up with that concept. No insult to Joe. Sometimes you want to look and say, listen, you, because I'm guilty of it, okay? I'm guilty of it. I have argued that maybe the very thing we need to do is give these religiously insane monsters what they want and then watch them tear each other to shreds in a fight over dogma and doctrine. We want to pray in the classroom. We want to pray in the classroom. Good. Let's control the government. And then once they control the government, they will literally tear each other's hair out and claw each other's eyeballs out. It'll... Over how many angels can dance on the head of a pin during the prayer in school? I know that urge. I know that urge. And I am so sick and godforsaken tired of the cynical political calculus that is involved in whipping you and me into a furor every presidential cycle and to a certain extent during the midterms, that I could just spit. Vote for the star-bellied sneech. Vote for the sneech with no stars upon Mars. But then they get to Washington, and they're all still sneeches. That's a Dr. Seuss reference for you, by the way. If you haven't gathered over this long period of time, a lot of my frame of reference was formed in my childhood. The Prime Minister of Pakistan reminds me of a Bugs Bunny scene. Nah, he's not in here. And the American political process reminds me of a cautionary tale for children by Theodore Geisel, otherwise known as Dr. Seuss. And I don't think that's necessarily a negative comment upon me, because those are easy lessons, and that's why we teach them to children, because easy lessons are apparently hard for adults to comprehend. William emails and says, I really try not to have this view. However, why does the term divide and conquer ring so loudly in my ears? Lately, I'm beginning to view both parties as a different train on a different route with the same depot as the last stop. I hear about change and the sad state of what we dare call an economy, some form of who knows what health insurance reform, and of course, the stay the course bang the drone deafening drum beat. I hear we will turn this around. The mental image that turn it around creates in my mind is the attempt of making a U-turn driving an overfilled garbage truck at 90 miles an hour on a two-lane country gravel road. Yeah, that don't end well. Thanks, William. So much for lighthearted. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I'm encouraged, and I pass this along to you as well. This comes from Skinhead Willie. Hey, Bob, I thought you might find how BBC presents clean coal to their business audience of interest. Check out the 4 December 2009 podcast at bbc.co.uk. Okay, write this down. I will read this once. www.bbc.co.uk/podcasts, podcasts, /series, series,
BizDaily, B-I-Z-D-A-I-L-Y, BizDaily. So that comes out to be bbc.co.uk/podcasts/series/BizDaily. And what you want to listen to is the podcast from 4 December. Nice piece of email coming in last night after the show from our dear friend Maura, who offered just a, well, you love getting this kind of feedback. Maura said, "Hey, Bob, I just finished listening to tonight's broadcast, which would be last night, and I have to tell you, I am blown away. Your running chronology of the U.S. involvement in the Middle East was incredible. You should be on mainstream media TV and give that history lesson to every person in this country. You truly have the gift to teach and make the facts accessible. Congrats on a great show." And I'm, you know, I'm not a diva, but I do love getting that kind of stuff because it means that it's resonating. Because I was sitting, I got to be honest, I was worrying. I was afraid I was losing people. Because granted, me and Reverbo were smart-assing around a little bit, but what was underpinning it was very, very serious. And if you're willing to walk into the sort of walking into the matrix, you can get a grasp on why we are where we are. And lo and behold, I was over at BartCop today. I think it was. Yeah, it was. It was over at BartCop today. Go have a look. BartCop.com. Maybe drop Bart a line and tell him you heard on, you heard about it on the horn. Let me see how far down it is, because it fits so perfectly with what we were up to last night. Sorry about the clacking there. Hey, look, you know, that's the way this works. Great picture of Sarah Palin as a Madonna. Sorry, I'm easily distracted. There it is. Yeah, I'd say if you go about a quarter down, you will see a graphic that Bart has posted from constructiveanarchy.com/blog, which is of Dick Cheney and the former Unocal Telex man, Hamid Karzai. And behind him is a map. And if you listen to Reverbo, the conversation I had with Reverbo for like an hour and 18 minutes last night, and you go and look at that graphic, it's a perfect fit. I kind of love it. I don't think Bart even listens to the show or anything, but it's just perfect. I love it when we sort of tune into some wavelength from the universe that nobody on either side of it knows is transmitting or receiving, and yet we get the message. This in from Critic at Large Reverbo, speak of the devil. Is the foxhole atheist referring to past or future? I don't mean to throw cold water on Joe's lament concerning future involvement. I agree we have to stay with it, but liberals and progressives got plenty involved in this past election, and Obama rode in on our shoulders. I was one of them. Whether people can stay motivated in the face of more disappointment is the big question, and it is. And that's why Virginia was lost. You got to remember, what was his name? I can't remember. It was some Cray Deeds. Yeah, that was his name, Cray Deeds. He lost his ass in the governor's race in Virginia because he spent his time running against Barack Obama. And the people that put Barack Obama over the top in Virginia said, well, screw you, buddy, and sat on their hands. And consequently, the poor old Dominion is back in the miserable, godforsaken, weird-ass hands of some godless, soulless, motherless repiglicking who is going to joyfully screw everybody in that state except for a small handful of filthy rich for the next 4 years while he hollers about the sacred embryos, the blessed blastocysts, prayer in schools, gay marriage, guns. You know the litany. Stuff has consequences. Honest to God, it does. And I don't know what the answer is. Shell, if you're under the mistaken impression that I'm the Shell answer man, wrong channel, buddy. All we can do is process through it and come to some sort of consensus idea of where we go. Because this is tough. This is a hard place to be for us.
How do you look at a president that you put in office who has thrown you under the bus and say, hey, I'm up for working for you for the next term, buddy? Because that sense is very real out there, that we're getting a good hard look at the undercarriage of the bus. I don't know where that stupid analogy entered the dialogue, but it seems to work. But I know gay folks have seen about as much of the underside of the bus as they care to see. I know that human rights folks in other quarters know what the universal joint looks like on a bus better than they ever dreamed they would from one of their own. I know that the anti-war liberals who busted their hump door to door to door to door and were called various and sundry filthy names by, you know, bagger horses' rear ends, they're pretty sick of it. And let me check. Yeah, it is December the 4th, 2009, which is a far damn cry from summer. And the labor movement still doesn't have the Employee Free Choice Act, and that's partly to blame on Congress, but it's also partly to blame on the Obama administration for not getting out there and saying, do it, damn it! And the American labor movement is getting a real good, solid look at the oil pan on said bus. Something big gonna have to happen to change that stuff. That's a whole bunch of people to be hauling out from under the bus and dusting them off and saying, no, 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 I'll get it done in the next term. Or just please don't hand me, don't let the Repiglicans have the Congress and Clintonize me. Good God, I'm no prophet. But when I think about the House impeachment, the House Special Committee on Impeachment investigating and considering articles of impeachment against Barack Obama because they're just dead certain he's really Barry Sotoro, and spending, you know, we don't like spending $30 billion in Afghanistan. How are you gonna like it when the Repiglicans decide to spend, well, it was $70 million on Monica Lewinsky. How are you going to like it when they decide to spend $250 million trying to impeach Barack Obama for being a secret Kenyan Muslim socialist? Because you stayed home in 2010. Is that going to be fun? Just ask. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, I guess that's me, right?
That would be you.
Hey, how are you? This is Alan from Miami.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
It's been a while. Every so often I turn on my computer and get you via the internet some way, of course. And so I'm listening more and more radio that way these days, so I listen to Mike.
It truly is the wave of the future. And I'm glad you called in when you did, because usually we have to hustle through the conversation.
Well, yeah, that's true. In any case, I came to be a little bit critical here. I was going to mention something about what Joe said, then I was a little bit, heard what you said. Now, your latest thing is, you're setting up the scenario of the impeachment of Obama, and, you know, how are you going to feel if you sit out in 2000? I would just say, first of all, don't go there. That's just the wrong place to. We don't need any more intimidation from either side for any sources to vote. I don't think that's a reason to vote a certain way.
I don't think it is either, Alan. And that's not my purpose.
The thing is that what I hear, at least from my point of view, what I'm hearing, I know it's my point of view, but. And their fellow, I mainly called up because of what this guy Joe said. What do you call him, Joe? The
Foxhole Atheist, yeah.
Foxhole Atheist. I agree with his first statement. And what was it exactly? He said that we've been checkmated or something?
Yeah, he said we're at checkmate.
We're at checkmate. All right. I would agree with that. But we're checkmated, not Not because the Republicans have a good chance of gaining more control in the next time. I mean, the last time I heard, the other time that I heard of this Joe the Fox, it's always you're looking at this dynamic of Democrat Republican. That's the checkmate. Do you understand? If you believe that those are your only choices, and that you will always have to bounce back and forth between those things, and both of them are run by corporate dollars, yes, indeed, we are checkmated.
But that's the choice you get in November.
That's the choice we have made. The Green Party, for example, has existed since 1982, and people, I won't say are too damn stupid, but too brainwashed to understand that if you don't build some new basis of understanding your world, and I say this, I don't usually go so much out on a limb and talk about the Green Party this well, but I'm very much a part of it. But it's not just another alternative political party. I realize the reason why not many people hear about it, or most people wouldn't have confidence in something like that, it's not even about what it is today. It's about what it could be. It's about looking at our politics from a totally different perspective, a non-corporate politics. And you can't get that in either the Democratic or the Republican Party. I don't care how many so-called progressives are running in the Democratic Party. Every time, I was at a dollar for every time I heard a so-called progressive say, well, we're going to take over the Democratic Party from the inside. I want to laugh myself sick, because the only answer I have to them is, fella, you know, the Democratic Party has been taken over, and not by you. It was taken over a long time ago. You've been had, and you get had every 4 years. Every time you give money, you make phone calls, you knock on doors. You know, they take your money, they take the phone calls, they take your endorsement, and they take it to the cleaners. There's not one progressive thing that has come out of that party in at least 30, 40 years or more. And I defy anybody to show me one. I will agree this. If they do, if you can, but really progressive, no way. They are more and more under the control of whoever pays the bills for the electoral system. The electoral system is supposed to be our window to democracy, but instead, the electoral system has become the gatekeeper, the little funnel, where the corporate world realizes all we have to do is control what happens during that electoral period, and we got the whole ball of wax. We create the corporate state. And so we have what I call a cosmetic democracy. There's no case you could make that says our Congress is freely elected by the American people and represent the people who voted for them. No way on this earth. It no longer resembles reality, that kind of thinking. The problem is we fall for it. We also believe the president is some sort of important figure. The president is a high-level middle manager who is a spokesperson for a bunch of unseen people who are pulling the strings behind him.
Within the constitutional framework, he is supposed to be a co-equal of Congress and the judicial branch. He does his job. The Congress does its job. The judicial branch does its job.
Yeah.
And everything works together. However, with the rise of the administrative state beginning a little before Lincoln, that vested more power by virtue of the administrative agencies, that vested more power in the presidency. And from that time forward, what you get, unless I'm misreading this, Alan, and I defer to your vast store of political knowledge, because I do respect it.
I don't know.
but from that time forward, what you have is a dynamic in which, for the most part, with the single exception of the sort of Republican lurch toward progressivism that you have with Teddy Roosevelt that then almost vaporizes immediately, right, what you have is a Republican president tries to use administrative agencies and so-called executive power to wrest power away from the Congress, whereas Democratic presidents tend to try to, passively let that Congress, or let that power go back and reside in the Congress.
Well, yeah, but I think that's that narrative, which may have held water at one time, is no longer the question. What we have, as I can see it, is as a corporate entities that want to control our state, that make all the decisions. I mean, let's look at it. Education, decided by corporations. Healthcare, decided by corporations. Housing, decided by corporations. The banking, you don't even have to talk about. Medicine, health, you name it. So what we have is they have realized that the work that they do is using the parties, that the two parties, at least from their leadership, not the people who are in them. I mean, obviously very decent people involved in the Democratic Party and even in the Republican Party. But the problem is that the Republicans are sort of charged with taking all the right-wing nutcases and keeping them in the corral and charging forward with their, what I consider, war against liberals or progressives, you and me and other people who have anything, have a heart that's functional. And the Democrats have been given sort of a corporate function. This may be a bit simplistic, but it's the corporate function of the Democrats is to corral all the other people, the people who stand aghast at what the Republicans would do, the people who get upset, not only the liberals, but the other people who just don't like what the Republican agenda seems to be, and take all those people and make them silenced and ineffective. In other words, make sure they're doing the job. They each have two, both of them have a task, as far as I can see it from the corporate world. And each one is to make sure their constituency gets on board or gets out of the way. The Republicans more is getting them on board. The Democrats kind of have to get them out of the way, silence them. When Barack Obama first spoke in 2004 in Boston, Michael Moore, who did everything he possibly could to try and get Democrats elected that time by putting out his film, Fahrenheit 9/11, getting it distributed in this country in record time, he was confined to what they called the free speech pen outside. They wouldn't allow, during that Kerry thing, anybody who came out and saluted everybody, they wouldn't allow anybody to get in there and talk about anti-war or anti, they silenced the left and progressive people thing, and they do it regularly. The only time.
Well, let me just break in for a minute, Alan, to agree with you, because I alluded to it with the business about the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yes.
I have come to a very cynical realization that I'm not at all comfortable with, not because of, just because, you know, it violates my idealism, which I hang on to tooth and nail what's left of it. When the Democrats do what you just described, where they corral all the people who are horrified and send them out into the streets to sort of do ideological battle with the corralled weirdos from the right wing, you come down to a realization that, for instance, the Democratic Party treats labor like the right wing and the Republican Party treats the anti-abortion movement.
Yeah.
Because what we seek is always, it's always just beyond our, it's the carrot in front of the horse's nose. And no matter how hard the horse runs, the horse can never reach the carrot because the game is rigged. Because if the horse ever gets the carrot, then you're terrified that those people that put you out of the top, over the top, will stay home. But there is a failure of realization, at least on the Democratic side of things. I mean, I have this horrific nightmare vision. I really do, Alan. Of the day after the election in 2010, when the Senate and the House has been turned back over to the Republican Party, and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi come out with this dazed and confused looks on their faces, saying, well, why did they do that to us?
Well, I tell you, the day after the 2006 election, I called up on some radio shows that we had. I remember Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's a Democrat here from the Miami area or the South Florida area. And I said, it was the November, the Democrats had just won back the Congress, and I called up and started talking about impeachment. Oh, wait a minute. We can't go there. What are you telling me? You're really going to ask for trouble. We have to win the 2008 election. I knew then that was a lie. I just felt it. That's, you always have to give the next excuse. Oh, we can't be for impeachment, because otherwise we jeopardize the 2008 election. Well, guess what? You won the 2008 election. Where's impeachment now? It was never there. It was never on the table. There is never an agenda. And when you made your litany about the different causes where we've been sort of betrayed, including the labor thing, it was the obvious one, the health care thing, where we've just been betrayed upon again. Are you familiar with the American Institute for Free Labor Development?
No.
AIFLD or something like that. This was, and I don't really know all the details. I'm, you know, not a political historian in that sense completely, but there was a time.
time that when there was a sort of political upheaval in Latin America, and there was a lot of leftist influence, some of which resulted in the Workers' Party in Brazil with Lula and all that, and there was Chile with Allende and so forth and so on. They had active labor unions. They had people organizing for their own benefit in to have, you know, better wages and more control over the jobs and so forth and so on in Latin America. And one of the things that the brilliant political strategists and policymakers of the United States came up with, well, what we have to do is send a group of people down here to show them how to make real unions like the American unions, where we don't fight politics, or we don't get involved in parties and like leftist parties, and we're not Marxists. We go down there and we show them that a real union goes down there and fights for wages and stuff like that. That's it. And so they created the American Institute for Free Labor Development to show the people who were real labor unions how to be the kind of union that we have here, which we now see.
Wow, how dare they?
Yeah.
And I mean, something like that you would think would bring Joe Hill and Big Bill Haywood and Samuel Gompers and Walter Reuther and the whole crowd right up out of the ground.
Instead, they fell for this thing. They joined in. The Democratic Party helped get the AFL-CIO involved in going down to teach their brothers down there how to not be political. And look what they got in return. Look what they got in return. They got screwed. Now they don't even organize to try and discuss wages. They try and discuss how little they're going to reduce the wages. That is the legacy of the Democratic Party. How can you possibly put another ounce of faith there? We must make something new. We can't count on changing. There is no change.
Okay, but let me ask you the $64 question then, Alan.
Sure. Yes.
I don't disagree with a lot of what you've said. I balance that against the words of Boss Man Wayne, who has from time to time said, you know, I'm a 60-some-odd-year-old guy, and I'd love to have a new party, but I don't have time to build one. I've got to make something happen now.
Doug, you want an answer to that?
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to what he's about being checkmated. All the people who have said that all along are to blame for not having the change that we needed all these years. Every 4 years that you put something off, if we're up against the wall, if we have fascists at the door, it's because they always fell for that line. We can't afford to do it. We can't wait. We can't do that because it'll, you know, upset. You know, what is it that you could do right now that can turn a Democratic majority in the Congress to vote against the war? What is it you could do that get a Democratic majority says, you know, our Constitution is so valuable, we must vote for impeachment. We must vote to impeach people who break the law. We can't allow this anymore. What could do it? Certainly not calling them up on the phone, sending them letters, knocking on their door, visiting their offices, electing them to office. None of that has ever worked. The one thing that would do it is if tomorrow 300,000 people switch their registration to Green Party and all of a sudden the rules of the game have changed. They look around and suddenly they don't own the game anymore. They can play the game they do because they own the game. They create the rules. Both the Democratic and Republican Party got together, for example, in 2000 and had Ralph Nader, who was he was in Boston at the debates in a separate room watching on TV. He was kicked out and he was threatened to be arrested by the police. And that was a decision. The police were called out at the behest of the Democratic and Republican Party. I only mention that to show how they work in cahoots to make sure that there are no other...
Right, because that they have in common. That is their common turf.
Okay, but they set the rules up. We have to play by the rules. Until the day we break the rules, we lose.
Okay, Alan, let's keep...
So I'm something also, and I'm probably not going to see the results of the efforts, but I'm telling you that until we say, I'm sorry, your rules don't work anymore, we don't play corporate parties in America anymore, we will always be their victim. We will have a president who does what he's told rather than does what we would like him to do.
But as much as we would like to do all of this, Alan, there has to be an infrastructure underneath it, correct?
We have to build it. Well, you know, I agree. I'm not saying what it is right now. I'm not saying there's another third party sitting waiting to go. There never will be because they never allow it. You know, they don't. For example, this is just a small thing. Had Nader been allowed in the debates, and back then I was a coordinator of some campaigns of his here in Florida, including the state campaign, to be honest with you. I was his main coordinator. All we wanted to do is get him in debates. We had no illusions about him winning the election, but we wanted some common sense and some decency brought into the debates. They can't even afford to do that. They will not. They will kill you before they let you do that. Isn't it time that we understand that? I mean, they could have smeared. I mean, Al Gore could have smeared George Bush all over the place and didn't do it. They could have talked about his drunk driving record. They could have talked about his military record. They're playing games, and we are the ball they're playing with.
Okay. Well, let me. Okay. Well, but let me go back to the theme that or the inquiry I'm trying to make here.
Yeah.
Election laws in this country, to the extent that we count Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands and the Marianas and Guam, I guess there's 54 separate sets at least of election laws. And
that's set up for that. Yeah, it's set up to make it that way.
And the game is rigged.
Right.
I mean, there's no argument there.
Do you know how many congressional seats are up for grabs every time there's an election?
One third of the House.
No, but what? Only 4%.
You mean are actually viably takeable?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. Well, that jibes with something that I read back in the Reagan 80s that a sitting member of the Soviet Politburo was more likely to be unseated in a Soviet election than a sitting member of Congress. I don't think it's changed.
We can really put that in the back of our mind. We are
okay. Wait, Alan, please. Back up just a hair. I started talking about infrastructure and election laws, and no offense intended. You started talking about congressional candidates.
Okay.
And that's not a criticism because but you know what? If you really want to build this movement, it has to be built at the dog catcher level.
Yes.
If we're really earnestly serious about this, one, the game is rigged. It's rigged by the fact that you've got to come up with filing fees, which are generally, at least in this state, are based on a percentage of the salary. So you've got to come up with that out of your own pocket to do it. Because if some company gives you a donation, suddenly, you know, oh, look, I'm getting corporate donations. My values are screwed. So you got to come up with that. And then you got to, you know, and you got to get on the ballot that way.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is, that's how it's going to have to happen. It's going to take people of good conscience who are willing to forego this, that, or the other thing, eat beans instead of meat, eat, you know, whatever,
yep,
to come up with the filing fee. And until such time as some significant percentage of every state legislature race, every county commission race, every mayoral race, every race for alderman or library board has an independent, a green mountain party here on it, we can forget about the congressional candidates and we can darn sure forget about the presidency and the governorships.
Well, I would respectfully tend to disagree with you there. I would say that a lot of what you say is probably true because of the mechanics of it. But it has an awful lot to do with our ability to change the narrative to Americans. And it has a lot to do with understanding what's going on. It's not just a question of sticking with the mechanics. First of all, we want to try and change those things. But the fact is that we need to start offering alternatives. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, because a lot of people say, well, why do you send somebody to run for president? Well, it's the only time we get any press at this point. Although
and here in this state, for instance, the Mountain Party has to run somebody for governor in order and garner 5% of the vote or something like that in order to remain a viable party on the ticket to be able to even mount those challenges for Dogcatcher.
So that's a challenge. That's a challenge to democracy right there. In other words, we don't need to go look for people who fly airplanes into buildings. We have out and out enemies of democracy right here, right now, and a lot of them are in front of cameras and microphones. We have so many laws that would work against against real democracy where people can organize in the way they want and get themselves heard. Even in Brazil, if you have 25 candidates for president, all 25 get onto TV, even if it's for 20 seconds. Here, we don't allow anything like that. In other words, it's rigged so well, they're very much scared of anything that changes it. So while I agree, there's a program that has to be set up to start working on these local things, and there are hundreds of Greens who've been elected to local office and stuff. We don't hear about it. Most people don't know about that. I'm mentioning Greens in particular because I'm familiar. But you could probably run some challenge. I don't know if you knew that in Maine and in Illinois, Green Party candidates for governor have gotten upward of 11% already.
And among other things, Maine, if I'm not mistaken, has enacted clean elections legislation.
True.
As has Arizona.
That's how they got somebody elected into their state legislature and who was reelected.
You know, I'm frankly tired of a political process that rewards nothing but naked ambition. Alan, I mean, I'm not opposed to what you're putting forward here.
So what I'm saying is, but there's a way, the way I look at it, there's a way to do something about it now. Because, first of all, what you'd think most Democrats in this binary kind of fantasy we have, Democrat, Republican, good cop, bad cop kind of thing, you'd think that the Democrats are most offended by the Republicans and they save all their heavy artillery for the Republicans during elections. They spend most of their money attacking independents and third-party people. Because especially something like the Green Party or Nader or something like that, that poses a greater threat to the Democratic Party than the Republican Party. Because the Republican Party, every Republican attack on a Democrat, they wear with a badge of honor. And vice versa, when a Democrat attacks a Republican, the Republicans say, hey, that's great. But when somebody from the outside comes along, that's when they're threatened, and that's where you can follow the dollars, you can follow the money. That's who they attack most. They don't want the game to open up. And they'll tell you all these stories, oh, you can't do that, you can't split the vote, you can't spoil. Well, they have spoiled our lives. They have spoiled our futures. They have spoiled any chance for health care. They are spoiling the lives of kids they're going to send over to fight in some useless war over resource control. So I don't, you know, the electoral spoiling doesn't make any sense to me when you actually look at the real spoiling going on. The fact that our Treasury had a hole drilled in it and all the money drained out, and none of the people in Congress seem to get that we was robbed. They get upset about it, you know, all that stuff. So we have to do something. So what I think, in those states where you can register, because not in every state you register to vote, but in those states, I think the smart thing, it's not what Joe, the, what have you said, the, what, the anarchist? What
the foxhole atheist.
Foxhole atheist. He said, well, I'm going to, you know, one, he says he's going to, he'll get him, he'll show him, he'll vote Republican. Well, that's crazy. I'm afraid. I'm sorry to say. But he also said you register independent. No. Register independent. Register independent is part of the game. You see, you register Republican or Democrat. Independent is kind of the timeout box. When you're fed up, and they expect you to get fed up and jump back and forth, when you're an independent, you're still in the timeout box. They can still either count on you to sit home and not participate, or you will eventually jump back in with your party. So independent's fine with them. You don't want independent. You want another party. You register for another party that has goals and visions and a direction you want to go in that you agree with. And that's why I say you want to register. If you register that vote, it gets seen. They see these statistics. They suddenly know. You know, when they see the numbers of independents going up, both parties shrug it off because they're both, you know, all those people are up for grabs in the future. But if they go somewhere else and stay there,
but by the same token, the registered independent doesn't he kind of create a question mark in the minds of the two
yeah,
dominant parties?
At this point, when they have guns at our heads, we're not trying to create question marks in there. We want to create in their minds exclamation points that say this is a group of people that actually know what they want. We don't want people to say, "Gee, what will they do? They're out of the question." No, we want. Independent just says you're still buying in, you'll eventually buy back into this two-party game. And when you actually register for another party, since you register, say, for the Green Party, they know what you're standing for. You're standing for no to these wars over resources. You're saying you want the public airwaves to belong to the people. You're saying you want single-payer health care. You're saying you want labor unions to have some independence and power again. You want the end of the Taft-Hartley Act. All of these things are within a program and a platform. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to say that you believe in a, you know, it's not, when was the last time you were able to vote for somebody, an individual who believed in all of those things?
2004.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I voted for Dennis Kucinich in the primary.
Okay, that's cool. But I'm saying, all right, let's say on the state level, or you know, senator or a congressperson, you probably don't find many like that.
No, not in my lifetime.
Primaries. And so what I suggest is that since it's so difficult or so rare to be able to vote and have your vote show what you really believe, you can vote any day of the year. You don't have to wait for election year. You can vote with your registration. Your registration says what your values are. How else would anybody know what your values are? Because obviously voting Democrat or Republican doesn't say anything about your values. This is what you're, you know, like you're, so maybe.
And if you're already on the outside looking in as far as the power structure is concerned,
yeah.
Then your argument carries greater weight because what have you lost?
Yeah, and the thing is, what you've gained, in fact, you've probably gained the only leverage you have left. If in a magic wand stroke you could have 500,000 people suddenly register green tomorrow, for example, do you think they would notice this? Do you think they would get it? You'd have a better chance of stopping the war and getting health care than all the other efforts that have
been done. Sure. I mean, the idea of a whole bunch more Bernie Sanderses.
Exactly. And the thing is, you can do that even before the election. You don't have to go through the election cycle with all that. You can do it with your registration. People don't get they don't have the audacity to make, talk about audacity. That's not the audacity of hope, that's the audacity of action. That's the audacity of saying, I am changing my identity, and I'm telling you what my new identity is, and you guys, if you want me to be backing you again, this is what your agenda is. Single-payer health care, no more of these wars of aggression, impeach people who break the law, and step on their, wipe their feet on the Constitution. This is what the agenda. You want my vote? Here, just read the platform. This is what you got to do. How's that? How else do we tell them? You tell me. I throw the challenge back. You tell me another way, because I don't see any.
No, you're making a very convincing argument, Alan. What I said about I don't think it's an illegitimate concern, is. Yeah, I know that there are, because I'm one of them, there are a lot of liberal/progressive people who are absolutely sick at the notion of committing 30,000 more of our sons and daughters, our fathers and mothers, to some meaningless meat grinder. And it's being done by somebody that we knocked on doors for, that we endured the slinging of racial epithets at our children. You know, I lived that one. But by the same, it becomes the calculus of shades of gray, I suppose. Because when I think about trying to get any of those things, even half measures done, and we can have the debate about whether or not half measures matter, under a Republican Congress, and just the sort of national orgy of a further cheapening, if you can imagine the process being cheapened any further, and I can, the further cheapening of an America with the Congress hell bent on doing everything short of lynching Barack Obama,
right?
Which I don't agree with. Then the idea of a Republican takeover of the House and Senate in 2010. Is the stuff that sweaty 3AMs are made out of.
Well, let me just suggest this. If what I'm suggesting here, and this is actually agreeing with your analysis earlier about the problems about building a new electoral force. I'm not saying that doesn't exist, okay? What I'm suggesting here is not necessarily how you vote, but it's how you register.
I do get that.
And so that's the tactic. I see that as a highly not only viable, but an important political tactic, which helps empower and speed up that long-term process of slowly putting new people into office. I tell you, because if you had more people Greens running for office, for example, with the platform that they have and the non-corporate agenda. They're not taking corporate money. That's one of the problems. But that empowers even progressive Democrats, because suddenly they have a voice inside their party again, too. I don't necessarily think that's the route, but that part of it. But the fact of the matter is it empowers progressive thinking and talking, because suddenly you have to pay attention and listen because they're worried about it. And so I see that they're separate. The voting, you will vote for whoever you feel you have to tactically and importantly vote for in your conscience when you go in there to pull the lever or send in the mail or whatever, whichever way you vote these days. And that is a separate issue. But the thing is, if you go through a process of re-registering and then not only re-registering but sending an actual letter to your congressperson, senator, said you've made a registration system because you can't put up with this stuff anymore, and let them all notice that these are the things that I want you to do in Congress. This is what I sent you to Congress to do. You know what you're supposed to do. If you want to see my vote again, or we'll either put somebody up better against you, or you're just going to lose out because we're not going to be there. We're taking our time and energy that we used to spend making phone calls for you, and we're going knocking door to door to build a new political force in the country. And you better be on notice. It's time to do that. I actually at one point set up a website called switchtogreen.org, which was set up for the 2006 election, which is the idea that you had a better chance of stopping the war by switching your registration than anything else you could do. And it even had a place in there you could click and send a letter to your Congress.
and you know, there are hybrids of this kind of thing, Alan, that do exist. What is the name of that party in New York State?
The
Working People's Party.
First Family? The Family?
Working Families Party.
Because they have this fusion thing in New York, which makes it possible.
Right, but it's a third party, but that third party can also endorse main party candidates, as frequently happens. But it empowers that third party,
right?
And gives it far more political weight than it would otherwise have.
Yeah. So, but it's time that we grow. Whether we vote for all the time for the people in that political party, right? It's time that we empower and get them rolling, get them setting up an agenda that's in public, get them some airspace on radio and TV. It's time we start to do that for our own very own survival. Every day that we put off doing something like that, and every day that we listen to this mantra that you gotta vote Democrat, otherwise Republicans will eat you up. They're both use intimidation and fear to beat us up. And while we're in this beat up state, just like Naomi Klein says about the shock doctrine, when you're in a beat up state, you let people do stuff behind your back you don't even know what's going on. And they take advantage. They do the bailout in Wall Street. They run with breaking up the Constitution and then telling the public, no, we can't do anything about it. You know, that to me is a crime. This Congress and this president are complicit. But to me, I spent the last 2 years trying to work on a local organization or working with a local organization on impeachment and speaking to as many people as we could. We had people come down and speak. We sent out letters. We made phone calls. We had rallies. It's hard to believe. To me, impeachment is an essential part of the Constitution. I called it the key cell of the Constitution because it was built into the Constitution to save itself from being destroyed, the Constitution from being destroyed. It was to protect the Constitution. And what we see happening a lot, it's an interesting political scenario if you look, and you probably have seen this. When the opposing force, usually in this case the Republican Party, when they want to inoculate themselves from an accusation, which they probably deserve, they accuse the other side, right? So they call Obama a fascist, knowing that what they're doing is they're neutralizing the word fascist, because when it will be rightfully used against them, then the public will no longer accept it as a word. Well, that's what they did with impeachment with Bill Clinton. I believe the impeachment of Bill Clinton went beyond just attacking Bill Clinton, because it didn't make much sense to attack Bill Clinton because he was the best Republican president we ever had.
Oh no, it had everything in the world to do with attacking so-called liberalism,
right.
and sure it was.
But what here's how I see it: they used impeachment, a frivolous case of impeachment. And I wasn't a real friend of Bill Clinton, although I voted for him in the first election and voted for Nader in 96. But I went out in the streets to defend whenever we needed to defend Bill Clinton, because they were defending the presidency, the office of the presidency. They were impeaching him for ridiculous reasons. And I think the reason, if you look at it, one of the reasons they did that is to destroy the concept of impeachment itself. They wanted to make impeachment look like a stupid, dirty political tactic that you use against your political enemies that had no more meaning than that. And they took it right up to the wall, and by one vote, Bill Clinton was not impeached. But in the process, they destroyed in front of the American public the concept of impeachment as being something important to our political life and our Constitution.
Oh, they utterly neutered it.
And so, but they did it knowing that someday they were going to do something that would have it turned against them, and they were just...
Well, that's why they did it, was to inoculate themselves against it.
That's what I think. They wanted to discredit impeachment.
And that created the theory that the Republicans lost the Congress because of the impeachment. Therefore, the Democrats couldn't impeach George W. Bush because they'd lose the Congress. You've read the book.
And the thing is, I don't even think the people like Nancy Pelosi and Reid who said that, who mouthed those words, they didn't really believe that. But that's a good story or narrative you could sell to keep the people in the corral. See, that it doesn't have to be the truth, it's a reality. It just has to be a good story to keep people believing. And it's all about believing, and it's about hope. Hope, when I was listening to that campaign of Obama about hope, hope without action is meaningless.
Faith without works is dead.
I don't care who you go out to vote. Even if you're going out to vote for a Democratic candidate, well, go ahead, good for you. But if you have campaign letters in one hand, I want you to have a list of organizations in your community in the other hand. Because, look, if you have been tricked and fooled into believing that your involvement only goes up until Election Day and nothing else happens for the next 4 years or 2 years, that you've been...
Well, I think if we can say anything about the Horn audience at all is that nobody listening to the Horn is in that mindset.
Right.
Because, you know, this really is activist radio, Alan. And I hate to do this, but I do need to run along because there's some stuff that I need to get taken care of before we close for the weekend. But this has been a magnificent discussion, and I thank you very kindly for it.
Well, I am proud that you kept me on there so long. I'm just kind of amazed, in fact, and I really do appreciate what you do, Bob.
Well, I don't know why you'd be amazed. I mean, good conversation is what we live and die for here.
that's why I'm becoming such a fan. All right.
All right. Thank you, Alan, and a very good weekend to you.
Take care of yourself.
Bye now. From Florida, that's Alan, and I don't know if we're going to get to the remaining buttons because there's a couple of things that have to be said. Mainly a program note. There will likely be no show on Monday, and there's a reason for that. The reason there will be no show on Monday is because there will be 3 hours of programming earlier in the day. Beginning at approximately 2 p.m. on Monday, the 7th of December, we will have a live broadcast coming to you, assuming that the series of tubes, you know, it's not a big truck, assuming that the series of tubes continue to work, we will have a live broadcast coming to you from the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. This is a huge rally. People are coming from all over the United States for this rally. This rally centers on saving Coal River Mountain. Every night, if you listen to this broadcast, one of the last things you hear is coalriverwind.org. We are not going gently away from Massey Energy's determination to kill this beautiful piece of green energy vision in its cradle. We are going to make a noise on Monday. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will join us on Monday, this December the 7th, as part of that great and patriotic noise we intend to make. The timing, again, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., Monday, December the 7th, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Eastern Standard Time. Tune into the horn then, and you will hear an amazing array of speakers. Your humble servant will be emceeing and streaming. Be a witness. If you can get here, get here. I'm not kidding. Add the weight of your physical presence to those of ours at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, Protection, in Charleston, West Virginia, Kanawha City. Add the weight of your energy to that gathering. But if you cannot get there, then by all means, join us live via the horn stream on that Monday afternoon. This is desperately important. Because at the same time, Copenhagen will be beginning. And I'm still very bothered by the fact that there's not an absolute army of Appalachian people in Copenhagen raising a ruckus. Because we are literally ground zero in the battle to save this planet. That is not to say that other initiatives are not important. But there is no initiative and no issue that is more important than what is happening in Appalachia. So please join us for this very special broadcast from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 11 to 2 Pacific Time. Please join us on the horn. You know, from time to time, I ask you to tell your friends, tell your neighbors about what happens on the horn. For this one, tell everybody you can. Overload the stream. Let the negligence and the disdain of West Virginia state government and the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection be displayed all over the world, and then take action. It is going to be exciting. It is going to be challenging. It is going to be an effort in citizen democracy, and it lies at the very heart of the First Amendment right to petition the government for redress of grievances. For the grievances that exist in the Coal River Valley are legion. And it is unacceptable that an entire region be treated as wholly expendable in the relentless and remorseless search by the coal companies, and particularly Massey Energy, for holy profit. That's profit with an F. Join us. Be there. A lot of work has gone into this. I see that Sparky has said, "Got it, Bob, going out to my IBEW site." Whatever your social, are you on Facebook? Are you on MySpace? Do you tweet? Start letting people know now. The very heart and soul of not only the environmental movement, but the human rights movement will be in Charleston, West Virginia on Monday, December the 7th, 2009 at 2 p.m. And the only place that you're going to be able to hear it live is right here, headonradionetwork.com. Sometimes being aware, just being aware and helping others be aware, is the beginning of the remedy. What happens on Monday is most assuredly a part of that. I'm sorry I didn't get to the other blinking lights on the phone tonight, but I hope you will try back next week, perhaps Tuesday evening. If you will, I'm being asked, what is the formal name of it? Gosh, I'm hard pressed, but I will do everything in my power. I'll tweet it. You know, if you can subscribe to Bob Kincaid on Twitter.com. I'm easily findable on Facebook. And I will post about it for all I'm worth over the coming weekend and on Monday. Tell everyone. Let an outcry go up from every corner of this country that the people of West Virginia, Appalachian people, are, as I have asserted so many times, every bit as American as anyone else. Let it be known that Massey Energy's own admission that should their dam break at Brushy Fork, practically the entire Coal River Valley would be killed. Let it be known that such a sacrifice is not acceptable in a nation that calls itself either civilized or by some Christian. Let it be known. Let it be known. And so we come to the end of our Friday on the Front Porch, and I thank you for your time. Many thanks, as ever, go out to all of you who contribute to keep the horn going. You know, what we're doing on Monday, the only reason we'll be able to get down there is because of your support. It's the only way, only reason. The only reason we'll be able to pay the additional bill for being able to have internet streaming capability through a telephone is because of your support. It's the only reason. And so I hope you know that when I put on the pitches, the seemingly incessant pitches that I hate making, and you're probably tired of hearing, I do it for reasons that I think you agree are good ones. And I also understand that there are many people who cannot contribute. And I offer reverence for the struggle you have. And I honor it because we live inside the same struggle. Thanks as ever to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the moderators, the News Ninjas, our blogger. Thanks, inestimable thanks, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and yes, CoalRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are at the end of the first week of December, and it's kind of cold and dark and dreary outside. But you know what? That's why we have the infrared heaters on the front porch, and that's why we'll mull the cider and put the jug away and take those long necks out of the ice. You know, it's how you deal with the seasons, isn't it? It is Friday on the front porch here on the Horn. I'm just Bob, and I'm awful glad to have you along for the ride this evening. Hope you enjoy yourself. You know how it is with Friday on the front porch. We go a bit afield, if you know what I mean. More than the usual stuff is suitable for conversation. Well, what isn't suitable for conversation? Bearing in mind that there are people having dinner during the show, but you know what I mean. Oh, big old pot of vegetable soup on the stove over at Sue's. Yum, yum. Toast up the French bread. Ah, yeah, that's the good stuff. And they're dancing. They're outside chasing snowflakes. The young folks are outside chasing snowflakes with their tongues in Austin, according to Texas Betsy. They don't see snow that often, but you know, there's a lot of coal-fired power plants in Texas. So I would highly recommend against ingesting said snow in any amount. Just, you know, cuz. So that's some of the places that we are. Some other stuff to go into this evening, Front Porch Friday kind of stuff. Now, I got to say that I was, just rather taken by this one particular story out of the New York Times today, or yesterday, actually. Headline, Bin Laden not in Pakistan, Prime Minister says. The Pakistani Prime Minister, countering demands to intensify the hunt for Osama bin Laden, said Thursday that he did not believe the fugitive leader of al-Qaeda was in Pakistan, as many Western governments and intelligence agencies assert. And you know what a sad, sick, sorry sense of humor I have that immediately reminded me of this.
All right, Clancy, take the boys and surround the house.
Tickers, the cops.
Hide me, quick, hide me.
Here, quick.
Hide me, too, hide me.
I must be dreaming. It couldn't be this easy. Okay, quick, hide in here. Now don't move until I tell you to.
All right, open up. This is the police. All right, where's Rocky? Where is he hiding?
He's not in the stove.
Whoa, he's hiding in that stove, eh?
Now look, would I turn on his gas if my friend Rocky was in there?
You might, Robert, you might.
Well, would I throw a lighted match in there if my friend was in there?
Well, all right, Robert, you've convinced me. I'll look for Rocky in the city.
The coast is clear, fellas. They've gone.
Okay, Clancy, take the boys and surround the house.
Jesus, fellas, the cops!
Open up! This is the police!
All right, Rabbit, where's Rocky? Where is he hiding?
He's not in this door! was in there?
You might, Robert, you might.
Well, would I throw a light?